Good evening. I'd like to call the May 7th, 2019 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Rich John.
Here.
Anna Kellis.
I'm here.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Yes, I'm here.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne.
Present.
Dave McKenna.
Yes.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Mike Stigler.
Here.
Shauna Black has asked to be excused. Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you. I have the honor of having not one, but two, but three certificates to present tonight. So the first one on our agenda, and if Bridget Schaffner is here from the NAMI Finger Lakes Association. Bridget, you want to come on up? And Chris Bobrowicz. Thank you very much. First, I'll read the Mental Health Awareness Month certificate here. Whereas mental health is part of the overall health and essential to the well-being and the vitality of our families, businesses, and communities, and whereas 90% of the individuals who die by suicide experience mental illness, 1 in 5 adults experience a mental health problem in a given year, and 1 in 17 adults live with severe and persistent mental illness such as depression, bipolar disorder, or schizophrenia, and whereas approximately 1/2 of chronic mental illness begins by the age of 14 and 3/4 by the age of 24, and whereas 75% of women and 63% of men in local jails have at least one mental health problem, and whereas early identification and treatment can make a significant difference in successful management of mental illness and recovery, and whereas every citizen and community can make a difference in helping end the silence and stigma that far too long have surrounded mental illness and discouraged people from getting help, and whereas public education and civic activities can encourage mental health and help improve the lives of individuals and families affected by mental illness, and whereas there's a need to increase public understanding of the importance of mental health and to promote identification and treatment of mental illness. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2019 as Mental Health Awareness Month in Tompkins County. So I'll give this to you, and either one of you wants to say a few words, that would be great. And I just want to recognize that Sharon McDougall and Frank Krupa from our Mental Health Department are here as well. So thank you all for being here and for helping us to raise these important issues.
I wanted to thank everybody here tonight for all of your support. Mental Health Awareness Month starts with the awareness of mental illness. That is the first step in fighting the stigma that unfortunately is so often accompanied when someone has a mental illness. I also wanted to thank the county for their support in getting the Wellness and Recovery Court up and running. I've been hearing some really great things already. It gets me really emotional because it's been a long time coming. It's very much needed and very, very much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you so very much. We appreciate it. Would you like to say anything else?
No.
Okay. All right. Frank, you look like you want... Okay. All right. And I'd like to recognize Lisa Monroe, our director of the Office for the Aging, for the next one. Whereas Tompkins County is home to over 16,000 citizens aged 60 and over who deserve recognition for their contributions to our community. And whereas Tompkins County includes a growing number of older Americans who enrich our community through their diverse life experiences. And whereas Tompkins County is committed to strengthening our community by connecting with and supporting older adults, their families, and caregivers, and acknowledging their many valuable contributions to society. And whereas Tompkins County recognizes the importance of bringing together all generations and engaging in activities that promote physical, mental, and emotional well-being for the benefit of all. And whereas Tompkins County can enhance the lives of older Americans in our community by promoting home and community-based services that support independent living, involving older adults in community events and other activities, and providing opportunities for older adults to work, volunteer, learn, lead, and mentor. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2019 as Older Americans Month and urge Tompkins County residents to take time during this month to recognize older adults and the people who serve them as essential and valuable members of our community.
Thank you. You know, for publicly recognizing the value that older adults have in the community, this year's proclamation really speaks to the theme of Older Americans Month, which is connect, create, and contribute. Some recent data collected by the New York State Office for Aging shows that there was about 6,800 older adults over 55 that contributed over 3.5 million hours of volunteer service with the economic impact of over $100 million in Tompkins County alone the past year. So this, you know, as this is just the collected data, so I'm sure that there's much more undocumented volunteer service out there. And many of those, as you guys know, there's a lot of people that, older adults that are very engaged and that contribute, you know, a lot of service to our community, but across many areas, but a lot of this is actually given back directly to older adults themselves. Some of the most frail elderly people that can't necessarily contribute, and helping them to age in place and in their homes with dignity and quality of life. So thank you again.
Thank you, Lisa. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. And I'd like to bring up Diane Dawson and Pastor Teresa Sivers from the Methodist Church in Ithaca. This is a very special occasion that we'd like to recognize. Whereas the Methodist faith was founded by John Wesley, who was ordained by the Anglican Church of England, and whereas he founded this new Christian movement, the Methodist Society, in London in 1738 and traveled to the American colonies early in his ministry, and whereas the Methodist faith expanded membership in the United States and under John Wesley's direction, Methodists became leaders in the social issues of the day, including prison reform and the abolition of slavery. And whereas on May 10th, 1819, only 81 years since the founding of this new movement in London, and only 35 years after the formation of the Methodist Episcopal Church as a new denomination, Methodism was present in Ithaca, New York, noted by a church location with the deeding of land by Simeon DeWitt at the corner of Aurora and Mill, now Court, streets, to the First Methodist Episcopal Society. And whereas this location still stands today as the first location of the Methodist faith in Ithaca, New York. And whereas over the years, there were several church building reconstructions as the congregations grew or as structural needs dictated, a second Methodist church on State Street existed for 82 years and then merged with the Methodist church at the Aurora and Court Street location. And whereas the naming of the current church at 402 North Cayuga Street St. Paul's United Methodist Church happened at a later date, and whereas on May 10, 2019, we honor the 200th anniversary of the deed of the land by Simeon DeWitt for the First Methodist Church in Ithaca, New York. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby recognize and celebrate May 10, 2019 as the 200th anniversary of Methodism in Ithaca, New York.
Yes, I've been in Ithaca for exactly about 9 months, but I'm delighted to be here and delighted to be celebrating 200 years. We launched our celebrations on Sunday, and we're delighted to have Carol Kamen, the county historian, with us to celebrate and to speak with us. We're not done celebrating. You'll see lots of us over the summer and into the fall. We're having a picnic down at Stewart Park on the 2nd of June. Everyone's welcome. Just a big potluck with some grilled food. And then on September 29th, we'll kind of culminate with a really large service inviting a lot of people, previous pastors in. And John Wesley believed firmly that the world was where he was to serve. And so all of us as Methodists seek to serve our communities and to try to make our communities a better place. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pastor. We really appreciate it. And good to see you, Diane. Thank you for bringing this to us. All right. Happy birthday. All right. I will be asking for an executive session later this evening to discuss litigation and a personnel concern concerning two specific employees. And I will probably at some point when we get through the early stuff move around a few things so that we can help staff to move on to their own evenings. So I have a few people for public privilege of the floor. If you are looking to speak but haven't filled out a form, the blue forms are in the back of the room. By signing this, you agree to the following. I agree to a 3-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers, and the clock is up on the wall. I have Faye Gugakis and Patricia Rodriguez. Faye is first.
Mike, I want to hand this to you. Before you clock me, I'm handing off the Cornell Daily Sun for all of you. I don't have copies. My name is Faye Gugakis. I live in the city of Ithaca. I don't know how many times I've been here talking about the Lime bikes, but I'm doing that again today. I feel the county board is just as responsible as the city to do something about the problems we have with dockless systems. Dockless systems are about to take over our community in full throttle. Okay, the e-scooters are going to be voted on at the planning and development tomorrow. Have you heard any publicity about it? Probably not, because I wrote a letter to the Cornell Daily Sun, which betrayed me. They said they were going to publish my letter and publish the fact that there was a public hearing tomorrow, and they did not. Today was their last publication. I have turned every stone. I have spent countless hours talking to politicians in Ithaca County and city and going to meetings, exhausting so many avenues, only to feel that the wall is put to my face. There has to be accountability. When you talk about dockless, you're talking about putting things anywhere. How about about if they came to your doorstep and you tried to get out of your house and it was blocking you? That's how I feel every time I go to a bike rack in town. This past Saturday, I was at the library book sale. Every rack there was taken up by Lyme bikes. I asked politely again and again, and then it turned out into a feud, okay? But then it calmed down. They said, did you go to the mayor? Did you speak to your common council people? Did you speak to this person? That I've exhausted everything. When I left, I did not shop there because I was very upset. I came back on Monday, and there was signage there. There were four Lyme bikes on the side. Signage works. Laws work. But the city doesn't want to do a damn thing about it.
1 minute.
Yes, and that's not enough. Because when Seth and Duxton sat here 2 weeks ago and questions were asked of them, they did not respond with the truth. They did not tell you the full story. The woman who just got the Ithaca Times, the Cornell Daily Sun, the county board representative, you could have asked Seth what you told me a month ago about your experience out west with the scooters or the e-bikes, but you chose to stay silent, okay? I would like to be sitting here. Invite me to sit here, and I will answer all your questions. I will tell you what we need to do. I'm asking you to invite me, because what I saw 2 weeks ago was despicable. Okay? We are going to have a vote tomorrow, and 3 minutes doesn't do me justice, because these things are not legal in New York State, yet the mayor brought them here, and there's no accountability, because Cuomo's not returning my call, the president of Cornell is not making an appointment for me, with me. I have exhausted every avenue. I want to know who's going to help me. It's as simple as saying to these dockless programs, you cannot operate here until you clean up your act.
Thank
and you
Ted.
Have a docking area.
Thank
and you
Ted.
Put signage up. This is a year of exhausting this issue, which is so simple.
Faye, thank you very much. Patricia Rodriguez and then Sherry Cortez.
My name is Patricia. I'm from Groton. The TCRC, Immigrant Rights Coalition, working group has circulated with several of you, with County Administrator Jason Molino and Airport Director Mike Hall, our concerns as well as our proposed changes to the MOA that is being drafted at some point regarding the airport expansion. Our proposals include that you add language to the portion of the MOA that speaks about the termination of agreement for any reasons by either party within 90 days. We are proposing that the termination of agreement add certain things. One of them is, I'm just going to mention a few. One of them is that CBP Customs Enforcement stationed at Ithaca Airport conducts immigration enforcement activities outside of the facility. That is a reason, that would be a reason for us to terminate the agreement. CBP Customs Enforcement stationed at Ithaca Airport harasses or discriminates any individual in the facility. That would be a reason to pull out of the agreement. CBP Customs Enforcement coordinates in any way with ICE or Border Patrol agents for the purpose of immigration enforcement, either within or outside the facility. That would be another reason to terminate the agreement. We would also like to see a community monitoring legal observer aspect to this project being established for at least some level of assurance of compliance. We sent this a month ago. We have not heard back from you other than an email from Jason Molino saying that him and Mike Hall reviewed it together and that the MOA will be signed once the construction begins, basically indicating there is nothing to do until the construction begins, at which time it will be a discussion between DHS and CBP and the county. I want here to call you out on this. This does not seem like a transparent process at all. It seems very much like you're choosing not to engage, not to address concerns, and to go forward with seemingly two people deciding what is appropriate to discuss with federal immigration agents. Indeed, our proposals have not to do with them, but with you and with us as a community. We are requesting that the county be more specific on this commitment to pull out if anything like some of the scenarios that I just read to you play out in practice. Because right now, All we have heard is that you're offended at the thought of you not doing anything if this happens. After all, this is Ithaca. Well, I want to tell you that horrible things are happening at airports very much like this one. There, I can tell you more about this example from Tacoma, Washington, but I don't have time. There are at this point 400 signatures to an online and in-print petition calling for a moratorium to the airport expansion project. Please listen, as there are not just a few impassioned activists requesting accountability.
These
requests also come from people who live near the airport and are in fear.
Thank you, Patricia. Sherry Cortez and then Mona Salzman.
Yeah, hi, I'm Sherry Cortez. I live in the city of Ithaca, but I'm not from here. I was born in Dallas, Texas, and raised on military bases all my life. And part of the military probably till I was 30, till I moved to Missouri with my third husband. I want you guys a little background because I've been everywhere. First and second grade was spent in the Philippines, have dog tags because could have been killed, but I'm not from here. I lived in Louisiana for 35 years. We moved up to Missouri in 04, and that's when I became an activist. Climate change is here. I'm here to speak against the airport. I know you guys we've been here numerous times, but I'd like you to vote against the resolution. At least moratorium the CBP facility. You guys can slow that down. We do not, with what's going on around the globe, it is not a time to be rushing into building an airport by the end of 2019. It's not going to benefit our community. It will benefit Cornell. This has been said many times. And climate change is here. I know I've been called a fearmonger, but I'm not fearmongering. It is here. It's upon us. We cannot continue on this unsustainable path. My family still lives in Bossier City, Louisiana, which is where Barksdale Air Force Base is. They throw away at least 2 to 3 bags of trash a night. At least in Missouri, if you want to recycle, there's somewhere to take it. There's nowhere to take it. You have to understand we're on a planet. China, all these huge countries with billions of people. It's going to take all of us, and having planes run between us and China is not going to help the environment. The CBP facility invites these awful, awful, and the President Trump has given them powers. He has powers under the National Defense Authorization Act, signed under Obama in 2012. They're pretty darn powerful. And if he ever decides to implement them, we can't do anything. I'm not fear-mongering. I want everybody to be reality. We need to be in a reality-based. I moved up here because my daughter-in-law is a physics graduate student, and she graduates in May and hoping to get a job here. And this is where I want to stay. I love this city. I love the people. Everybody I know is that my best friends were born and raised here. And I want this city to succeed, but what you're doing with the tax abatements, like another reason the airport has to be moved is because we want to free up that land. We cannot build on the waterfront. Cayuga Lake is already it's just awful. The environment, it's here. We need to do mitigation and adaptation. And I thank you guys for listening. I do appreciate you setting up the Veterans Administration. I do want to thank you. You do some things that are good. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Sherry. Mona Salzman, then Beth.
Yes, I echo what everyone else has said except Sherry's personal life. I'm here for the same reason that Sherry spoke and that Patricia spoke. The airport expansion in and of itself is something I oppose, but the airport is an example of something larger that I very strongly oppose. We know that Cornell must have its global Cornell, and our city wants to have a global Ithaca. If it had not been for people like us, what we'd be having now on Green Street, 2 15-story buildings with a gigantic convention center. And it's because of people like us, who many of you may think is, we're a nuisance, we have something that has real affordable, not market rate, but real affordable housing now on Green Street, a lot of it. Environmental concerns, concerns about immigrants are very, very dear to my heart. And we have, people have information, we have statistics about what happens to immigrants in places where these ICE people and border control people are. I call for a moratorium, and I don't understand how our city can promise us they're going to get more from Cornell, which they haven't, when they want the same thing. And more inequality is being created here. In other cities that are doing what the powers that be here want to do, and I want to say again, we are tired of a small group of people making decisions that affect our health and our well-being. It's time for community board of citizens to monitor what's going on at the airport and to have more say in what gets developed here. In other cities that are following this path, luxury buildings are being put up. Luxury airports are being put up with stadiums and casinos, which is going to probably come next year because maybe the hotels want it or the convention center wants it. But we have, they have buildings that are being taken over by Airbnb. And you know what happens then? Do you know what happens when that happens? Or do I have to tell you? The rents, I'm a renter in Ithaca. The rents go higher, higher than what people consider market rate, which is an arbitrary, number anyway. We need affordable housing, we need clean air, and we need to have more input in these really, really major decisions that affect all of us and that are being made by a handful of not only elected people, but appointed by appointed by appointed people.
Thank you, Mona. I've got Beth and then Aaron Gutman. Just send it back up when you're done so we have your name. Thank you.
Okay. Hello. I'm glad to be speaking tonight. I'll do my best. I thought tonight was going to be talking about the abatements, the tax abatements. Okay, what do I have written down here? People have talked about the expansion of the airport. I guess the private planes are going to be through Cornell. Legislature, are you going to approve the expansion? I've heard you guys haven't been answering, I'll say the community people that keep coming and coming. And what the last person spoke of about a community, I can't remember the words, but a community, the community would have transparency. Community people would have transparency. I find it real sad that our legislature, or I'll just say Ithaca politicians, and above and beyond throughout the country, I want to say that 20 years ago, I came here with my family. I had graduated from RIT. and we decided to move here. We settled in West Danby for a chunk of years. I know there's change that happens. There's life goes on. Things get expanded. Communities change. What happened to Ithaca? The beautiful land, Finger Lakes.
Thank you very much, Beth.
You are so welcome.
Aaron Gutman and then Alan Shapiro.
Hello, my name's Aaron. I'm a resident of the city of Ithaca, and I'll be really quick. I just wanted to add my voice to those against the airport expansion. I have deep concerns about immigrants, the environment, and I don't honestly see how this project benefits the vast majority of Tompkins County residents at all. I see it as really just benefiting Cornell and other and wealthy interests that want to get a stakehold in Ithaca. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. Alan Shapiro and then Barbara Reagan-Spann.
Alan Shapiro, Town of Ithaca. And I also am here to basically second the points that have been made. When I follow the work that Patricia has done with the legislature, I'm just struck by the closed nature of it, the lack of public involvement and the lack of transparency, and the feeling that this is something that's going to just find its way through, and then we're going to be stuck later on with a very unpleasant situation. And it just seems to me that we need to be much more vigilant about how trusting we are about these federal authorities that are coming into our place. And I don't think it's merited. I think we need to be much more careful than we're being right now and much more transparent in terms of responding to the public concerns that are being aired. And I say this not only for myself, but as a representative of the leadership team of Showing Up for Racial Justice. We see this as a core racial justice and immigrant rights issue, besides other hats that I might wear in terms of the environmental issue. But this is something that we as a team are strongly in support of the issues that are being raised by the Immigrant Rights Coalition, and I implore you to take it seriously.
Thank you, Alan. Barbara Reagan-Spann, if anybody else would like to speak, the blue forms are in the back.
This article is written by the probably the best-known British environmentalist, George Monbiot.
Need to go to the microphone, please.
The article that I just gave out is written by probably, you know, one of the best known climate activists in the UK, George Monbiot, who I suspect many of you know, some of his excellent writing. So the title of the article is Climate Change Means No Airport Expansion at Heathrow or Anywhere. So what I want to say is that in places that have signed on to the Paris Climate Accord, there's been lively and serious debate about whether or not it is possible for their country to allow for the expansion of any airport. So the question then is, would this project have gotten so far, especially given that at least a couple of our legislators are self-proclaimed environmentalists? analysts, if our country had signed on to the Paris Climate Accord? I think it's an important issue, and I think the answer is no. So I want to argue here that in every aspect of this project, we are behind places who've been less misled into backwardness by oligarchic right-wing national governments relative to our discourses around climate change, around issues of immigrant rights, around the issue of the destructive nature for all of us in excessive income inequality, and the discourse around dangerous levels of government surveillance that is visited on all of us related to this issue of controlling, demonizing, and ejecting undesirables, including poor people and political activists. And I also think that this distance between you, our legislators, and the serious democratic discourse that I believe you actually know these issues require intensifies your unwillingness to listen to the piles of evidence we keep bringing to our plea for a moratorium followed by a public referendum on this wrong-headed project. Speaking of distance, I guess I want to get at something that's even more spiritual, the concept of distance from what you really believe in your heart. 2 weeks ago, Maura Kennedy Smith called me up very upset on the phone because they had started the clear cutting of the land purchased by the DOT from the county, which, as you know, had been a buffer zone. Now, the reason the FAA, by the way, changed their rules so that it was legal for it no longer to be a buffer zone has to do with the politics, this development craze politics that
okay,
even the
you,
FAA take on, took on.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate
I'm going to give you my second article because it won't take any time. You can read it on your own time.
Are there any other speakers?
No.
All right. Thank you very much. Municipal officials? George, hey there. You're way in the back. George McGonigal from the City of Ithaca. Welcome. Thank you very much for coming tonight.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. I just have a few things. Tomorrow night, the Planning and Development Committee meets. It's going to be a busy meeting. As Faye mentioned earlier, there's going to be a public hearing on the Lime Bikes e-scooter pilot program. They want to bring scooters to Ithaca, and there's going to be a public hearing tomorrow. It's not a done deal. Even if we pass the pilot program, it doesn't mean at the end of that pilot program these scooters are going to be accepted into the city. So that's one thing. Anybody that wants to talk about it or voice their opinions, welcome to come to that meeting tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at City Hall. Another thing they'll be talking about and voting on is the consolidated plan for HUD, Housing Urban Development Entitlement Funding. This is basically housing funding that the City of Ithaca gets, and we're developing a plan for the next 4 years on how to spend that money. One thing I wanted to mention to you is annually, about this time of year, a couple weeks ago, the city does their street cleaning process, and this year there was a lot of people who got towed and ticketed and towed, more than normal. So what I was thinking was maybe I should give you a heads up when that's going to happen so that you could put that information out on your listservs, because a number of the people that get ticketed and towed are people who come into the city to work or to shop, and so maybe we need to get the word out better. What do you think?
Yes.
Okay. I'll do that next year. Another thing the city's voted to approve is more money for the Gorge Rangers. These are the people who are hired seasonally to keep an eye on what's going on in Six Mile Creek mainly. And we're going to give them the ability to write parking tickets this year. So hopefully there won't be as much trouble in the gully, as we say in Schuyler County. I guess that's all I've got. Any questions?
Thanks so much, George. Any questions for George? Deborah.
Well, I can't come tomorrow night, so I'll say my piece to you here. I really don't understand, after Linebike has proven to be a bait-and-switch kind of business partner, and given the uncertainty that surrounds the legality of these motorized vehicles and where they can be used, and given the horrible experiences that these scooters have engendered in other places, why are you doing this?
Well, I've read with interest your Facebook post from the European vacation that you did not invite me to.
Would it have made a difference, George?
But yeah, it's valuable information, and we just came up with some more information about emergency room visits related to scooters. So all this will be considered.
Thank you.
I just want to say puppies can create injuries too. Deborah and I were at a Chamber of Commerce meeting yesterday when the Pete Mesmer, your parking director, made a presentation about the parking study that you're about to start. I'm curious, so I got a question and then a comment. Is there, he said something like it was going to get started in June. Have you picked a consultant yet? I didn't get that.
I think that's what's happening now. So to the best of my knowledge, we have not chosen a consultant yet, but that's under consideration.
Okay. I will repeat something I said to Pete yesterday, which is that, and he identified that there's a current need of 350 to 400 spaces identified for just four projects that are right now under construction. So as soon as they open, I mean, whatever shortage we have right now, when they all open, we're up to 400 spaces short right now. So his timetable was the report from the consultant would be done in like the first quarter of next year, and that there's then if there's construction of new spaces, we're talking like 3 years from now. So Deborah and I both urge that, not to speak for you, Deborah, but there's stuff to do right now, and we hope the city doesn't wait till next January or February or March or April to even consider things such as, and Pete said you are talking to TCAT about a circulator bus. That's really, I think that could reduce congestion, reduce need for parking in a lot of instances. I think there are a lot of lots that are used just during work days, like the county lots for county employees, that are available on the weekends and evenings. And I think our lots tend to be used that way. I just want to remind the public, they're not for the public during the work days of Monday to Friday, but after 5 and on the weekends, yes. There are a lot of church lots that are empty 6.5 days of the week. The city can, I think, it doesn't need a consultant to go out and find those properties and work on ways to make sure those are going to be available, those can be available when they're needed, when they're available and when people need them. So there are a lot of things that, I mean, this is, it's really an urgent problem. And also the issue that city employees basically have in their contract that they get free parking. I mean, you know, county employees don't pay for parking, but we also don't get it. So, you know, we have a hunting license for a minimal number of spaces. So but I think the contract situation with the city is much more robust. So we hope that the city will make urgent and needed changes without waiting for the consultant.
So. I second that opinion. I was unaware of the fact that it was okay to park in a county parking area on the weekends.
Absolutely.
And yeah. I don't know what the status is for churches, but that's certainly something we can explore. And there is one of the new commissions is tasked with parking. So, and I'm the liaison to that commission, so I'll bring that up at their next meeting.
Great. Thanks a million. And Anna and then Mike Sigler.
Hi.
Hello.
I was curious. I know you guys have been working on neighborhood by neighborhood. Updating the code, but looking at infill in each of the neighborhoods. Are there still active conversations about infill throughout the city? I'm curious where that conversation stands now that you've met with the organization that we brought in incremental development. I understand you guys will be meeting with them when they come back. That's not an easy question.
Your questions never are easy questions.
I know.
As part of the comprehensive plan for the city of Ithaca, we are studying each large neighborhood one by one and doing a secondary plan for each neighborhood. Southside just finished up. The waterfront / West End is close to being done. The next neighborhood that they're going to study in depth and make recommendations for is the near West End, like between the Commons and Fulton Street.
And these are recommendations to update the zoning?
Well, that's part of it. Yep. As far as infill, there's a move to clarify what zoning means, particularly in the R1 and R2 zones, which are single-family and duplex houses, about what actually can be added to a lot. And I think there's a proposal to specify, and I don't have all the details, but to specify that a secondary unit on a lot in that zone has to be, I think, 60% smaller than the existing, and that there has to be at least 35% contiguous green space in that lot. These changes haven't been voted on yet, but
that's the recommendation across the city.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The idea being that a lot of houses in these zones are being bought up by landlords and filled up with houses in the backyards.
Mike Sigler and then Henry.
Hey, George, I wasn't going to say anything because, not my city. But you're right. I do have people that come here and work. So I figured I would pipe in. And I'm not going to be there Wednesday. But I don't know. This might be my age talking. I mean, I am level 49 now. And I don't know, man. Scooters. I'm like, just more clutter, man. I feel like the crush of clutter when I walk around the city now. There's just, I feel the same way about signs. So my apologies to sign makers, but, have signs and Lime bikes, and everybody's riding them on the sidewalk, and I just want to take a walk on a sidewalk. It's literally all I want to do, and it's getting kind of like, yeah,
that's kind of a thing of the past. We're going to have scooters now. I go home and I trip over my kid's skateboard, and now I'm going to be walking down the sidewalk, and that's going to happen. It's like, I don't know. I just hope you consider that component of things, is that at some point it's like, wow, we have a lot of junk just kind of strewn upon our city. And it's all pretty green and yellow, and I was kind of hoping it'd be more John Deere than Lime Bike, but it this is where we are. So just hopefully you'll consider that.
All right. I appreciate the comments. I don't know if it's true with you guys, but I've noticed in city council things don't always go the way I want them to.
Hey, Mike, don't you sell signs?
I do.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay, just checking. Henry?
I want to talk about South Hill. You were mentioning all the places that you were updating the zoning, but you didn't mention South Hill.
I mentioned the whole city.
Well,
South Hill's part of the city.
When will South Hill be done? Updated zoning.
I think South Hill is next in line. That's my understanding.
After all the places you mentioned?
Yes. I mentioned two places that are all basically done,
right,
and one other place, which is the near West End. That's the next thing they're going to study.
Okay. I was also wondering how did Kendall Days go? Do you have any?
Pardon me?
How did Kendall's Day go at Ithaca College?
Kendall Day?
Well,
open slope day.
Their slope day.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, okay.
Four tops are playing. So.
I mean, I know that there's a lot of parties on South Hill starting last weekend or the weekend before, and right, there's been heavy. The police have been paying attention, and the residents of South Hill were pretty happy with this last weekend that they kept things relatively under control.
Okay.
Do you have something else?
Yeah, I just wanted to add my voice to the scooter conversation since it's up. The thing that concerns me, and I know we've all talked about this a lot, is just the safety. You know, that people ride this on the sidewalk. They don't ride with helmets. They ride on the street without helmets. And my mama bear kind of inside gets a little nervous for everybody, being a biker myself. I don't know if there's anything that can be done with that, but one of the things that I'm concerned about is that there are a lot of people who haven't been able to afford their own bike who can actually afford a Lime bike, and that is a good thing. I mean, I just want to acknowledge that it's not all bad for everybody. Active transportation is a critical, necessary thing that we all need to promote. We need to figure out ways to do it. If they're not the right company, fine, but I will always support any efforts to make more active transportation among all income brackets. The scooter issue, safety is obviously the big issue, so I feel like that needs to just be considered extensively before we move on anything. But
yeah, one of the confusing things about this is that they started with just regular bicycles, and now the majority of items they have for rent are e-bikes.
They're a lot more expensive.
And they're more expensive, but they do climb hills. And the scooters will not be able to climb our hills.
I thought there was a scooter that was able to.
Not. That, I mean, the Lime Bike guy says, no, they won't climb the hills. They said they've improved the brakes for coming down hills. But if you want to be cynical about it, the scooters are a lot cheaper to maintain than an e-bike for a Lime Bike. There's less money to keep your fleet going. So, for what it's worth.
And they're more dangerous.
I think we're about to find out.
Oh, God.
Leslie.
George, could you please repeat for me that you talked about the housing and economic development dollars, the IURA. What, there's a committee that's discussing what again?
It's a consolidated plan for HUD entitlement funding. And there's four basic goals, which I probably should have read at the beginning. One is to provide decent, safe, affordable housing. Also to create suitable living environments, to expand economic opportunities that could be loans to small businesses, and to expand the supply of decent, safe, sanitary, and affordable housing. And so these loans and grants will be handed out over the course of these 4 years according to these goals.
And so there's a group, so there's a public hearing, or there's a, what did you say was happening?
I think it's large. I don't know the exact method, but I think it has to do with the IURA and, and Nels Bond.
Okay. All right. I'll find out. Thank you.
Sorry. No more
problem.
Detail.
Annie.
Thanks for coming, George. I really appreciate you coming here, even if you don't have all the answers. You know, I really appreciate that. And I just want to also chime in a little bit about the Lyme bikes. I don't know the history as far as in other municipalities how it's been going. I sometimes wonder if this is a transition that we're going towards. I mean, when I've traveled, there's some cities where they have a lot of bikes and people use them. And the more you have, the more it seems the safer it is because people are more aware of them. And I'm all for getting people out of internal combustion engine cars or whatever vehicles. So I don't know, but I just wanted to thank you for bringing those topics up to us.
I think you're right. It is transitional. I was reading some background information, and Lyme bike started in 2017, so it's definitely a changing, rapidly evolving industry. So,
thank you very much, George. You know, we got 14 of us to think of questions for you, and we really appreciate you taking the time. You and Duck taking the time to do that and to come every meeting. One of you comes every meeting. It really makes a difference. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I enjoy coming.
Okay, you bet. All right, legislator, privilege of the floor. Amanda.
Great, thank you. I just want to let everyone know, I sent you all an email, but let the public know that on Thursday, this coming Thursday, May 9th, a young lady who has been volunteering with the EMC, the Environmental Management Council, has pulled together a showing of A Plastic Ocean, which is a documentary that talks about our plastic problem and the issues of our ocean becoming full of plastic. It's $10, $7 for students. She's put together a raffle to help cover some of the costs, and there's going to be a short discussion, I think, before and after. So please come support this. I'm looking forward to seeing this movie, and I hope folks will join us. Thanks. Oh, May 9th, 7 p.m. at Cinemopolis.
Thanks, Amanda. Anyone else? Rich.
I just wanted to mentioned the Family and Children's Service annual breakfast is this Thursday at 8 o'clock at the Ithaca Country Club. The Family and Children's Service, of course, is a provider of mental health services and counseling in our community, and the nice proclamation on Mental Health Awareness Month is a good reminder of just how important these services are in our community. I know that the speakers will be three of the counselors who help people will be talking about their experiences and their jobs. So that's this Thursday, 8 o'clock at the Ithaca Country Club.
Don't you want to mention something else Friday?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, now that you mention it, yes, the community celebration. Thank you. The Tompkins Center for History and Culture will be having a opening celebration on the Commons at 5 o'clock at the Bernie Milton Pavilion. There will be recognition of all the partners that have worked on the project for the past several years and the work of the county. We can't forget the county's participation as well. It should be a lot of fun.
Friday at 5. Anyone else? Anna?
I just wanted to let everybody know this coming Tuesday I'll be heading to Albany for a renter protection lobby day with Local Progress. If anybody last minute wants to join, please feel free. We'll be there all day in the Capitol. I know that Cynthia Brock is working on a resolution in the city on renter protection, so I encourage everybody to read that. I have her resolution. I have some information. Henry's been following it as well. This is a discussion about the expansion of the renter protections that have existed in downstate and the conversation about expanding them to the rest of the state. So,
thanks, Anna. Deborah? Mike, I'm going to ask you about the Dryden Rail Trail in a minute. That's Saturday. Okay, Deborah.
Tomorrow night, the Alcohol and Drug Council is holding an open house at the newly designated building. I don't have the address off the top of my head. It's the old AutoCAD building. It is on the east side of Tripphammer Road, just one building south of Graham. It will be from 7 to 9. It's designed to explain the program and alleviate the concerns of the neighbors, but anyone is welcome to come. Thank you.
Thanks, Deborah. Mike, what are you doing Saturday morning?
Well, after we go to the Tompkins Center for History and Culture Friday night, on Saturday morning, come on out to Dryden for the grand opening of the Dryden Rail Trail between Dryden and Freeville. A lot of activities, music, the driving of the Golden Spike on the rail trail between the mayors of Dryden and Freeville. And just a good time. So please pray for no rain for us.
That's changed.
And it'll be an important thing. It's a good milestone in the county's continuing efforts to expand our trails for the purposes of entertainment and recreation for our own people, also to attract other people and to improve our economic development through tourism in our county. I want to talk about something else. I like to sit every now and then and just kind of watch us and see what's going on and think about what's happening. And today was a good example of why it's so important that we have public participation on privilege of the floor. Every once in a while we get a group that's not happy with something we're doing. We're in an era nationally at the state level where folks are feeling anything but empowered. They're feeling that things are happening that are totally beyond their control. And they want to talk to somebody. And guess what? There aren't a lot of opportunities for people to talk to president or congressman or state senators or assembly people and voice their concerns. So they come to the county legislature because we're open twice a month. Come in and say what you please for 3 minutes, for the most part, and tell us what you think. You can come and yell at us. you can pat us on the back. That doesn't happen very often, but we like it. I think about what happens when some of these groups get misinformation that expands. I think certainly the airport issue is one of those. We've had others over the adding of 7 jail beds to our public safety building. Our resolution about the SAFE Act having to do with guns. We've had these kinds of things where people get agitated and come and talk to us because they're listening to what they hear from people that often they agree with. They aren't getting both sides of everything. We lack the newspapers and reporting that we used to have that tried to do things in a balanced, report things in a balanced way. We have commentators and national news that are slanted to one direction or the other. And so, and we have what really is fake news that goes around because there's no way to put a stopper in it because information travels so quickly on the internet. But it's important that we continue to listen to people, even those we don't necessarily agree with, because it is the one place that they get to express themselves, and that is part of our democracy. And remember, each of us has taken an oath to defend our Constitution, as have our other elected officials in the state and the federal government, as has the President of the United States. And when we hear some of the comments that are made which are contrary to what our Constitution provides for, it makes us nervous and worried, and it makes the people that we represent upset, anxious, and worried too. I've talked long enough, but I wanted to say some of those things.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Mike. Well said. Appreciate that. Annie?
Thank you, Martha. I want to also reiterate what Mike Lane just said about appreciating that people come out and say what's on their mind and also email us and sit down and talk with us. So I really do appreciate that, and I wish I had more time to sit down with more people and answer more emails. There's not always enough time, so I apologize for that. As far as the airport issue, we are trying to be as transparent as possible, and if you're not getting enough information, please, you know, let us know. Give us a call. You can come. We've been talking about the airport for, I think, about a year now, the expansion well before that, and so if you're wanting more information on certain topics, you can come to that committee because there's only a certain part that gets talked about here. So we are also always looking for people to serve on advisory boards about various topics, and we can give you more information about that because we're always wanting to get the public more involved. And a lot of things that I do keep hearing about the airport is that we're going to have a customs and border control office, and we are not. We are going to have a customs office. And a lot of people keep reiterating that this is just for Cornell. It is not. It has never been, as far as I'm concerned and as far as what I've talked to a lot of legislators about. It's for the people that are here. It's to help them be able to travel if they need to or they want to. Today, my 80-year-old mother-in-law flew out of Ithaca, and she was able to do that rather than us or her having to go to Syracuse or Elmira. And so I'm glad for that. It also helps with us to keep and retain certain jobs, such as tech jobs, in this community, to be able to have an airport that's easier to, for people to get in and out of. And I'm sorry the folks left that they brought up this issue. So the timing of the MOU, we did meet with people, and they submitted more information, and there's a certain time where we're going to review that and sit down and go over the nuts and bolts over the MOU, and that's going to be coming up. We're not doing it right this second, and so I know that's hard for people to wait for that. And I also wanted to just also say a couple of things that are one thing that's happening in my area. It's the libations for the library, which is for the Ulysses Philomathic Library. It's a fundraiser, and you don't need to have a ticket if you didn't get one. It's Wednesday, I guess that's tomorrow night, at 6:30 at Americana Vineyards in Covert. And then this one is just for the fellow legislators. I hope as many as possible can come to the meeting with Cortland legislators on, I think it's Friday at 11:45, so that we have a good showing for that. Thank you.
Thanks, Annie. I've got Leslin and then Henry.
Thank you, Martha. And Mike, thank you for your thoughts as well. I often think about, you know, being in political life is not a career for me. And I think of when I first got here, all the things that I just knew that body was doing wrong. And before I got here, and so I will come in here and change it all. And then you realize just how much more layered and complicated things are. It's not as simple. I remember Dooley to this day when we talked about budget, and I was like, well, what's the big deal? If we don't have the money, we don't spend it. She said, well, you don't run governments like your home budget. I think you should. She said, no, it's much more involved than that. And I got to learn that. So I know lots of very intelligent, well-meaning people in the community who studied issues and read a lot and want to share their opinions, and we certainly do welcome that. But I learned the hard way coming here that it is not just cut and dry all the time. Sometimes as you peel away, you realize the core is much deeper than you thought, and it's much more mixed up in there. So I always ask for our constituents' patience as we try to figure out how we're going to go about meeting the needs both of the county as a whole, our economic development needs, our social justice needs, and the needs of those individuals who might have a differing opinion. And we do try our best to do that. So thanks, Mike, for bringing that up. It may not be what people want to hear, but it is what we try to do. We all don't agree on everything around this table when it comes to voting on certain things. Otherwise, we would have a real boring legislature. So I'm glad for that.
But shorter meetings.
I don't know. I don't know about that either, because we talk a lot. I also want to take this opportunity. What I really wanted to talk about is thank the mayor and the folks of the city of Ithaca for releasing the videos, the video footage, body cam and otherwise, for the incident on the commons that involved police and citizens, local citizens. It was a sort of unprecedented transparent move to put the information out there so people can see for themselves, draw their own conclusions, and share their own opinions. Surely I'm not going to sit here and take any sides. But what I do know is that as a woman of color, and more specifically as a black woman with young men, children who are black males, I have a certain amount of fear their lives and what they might encounter, what any of us might encounter when we go out into the street. And this is not just about law enforcement. It's about the atmosphere in which we are living today. To travel south and feel and have to second guess whether I should go into a certain restaurant or not is an experience and a reality that no one should have to deal with. So when we have things like this happen in our community, it is incumbent upon all of us to create opportunities for both citizens and law enforcement to have the kind of conversation that needs to happen about how we're going to prevent these things from happening, from citizens doing wrong, law enforcement doing wrong. Again, not just about law enforcement, because we have, and we need to admit that we have citizens who do wrong. I do not want to, and I know there are many of my friends out there who would prefer to live in a community where we don't have police. I'm not one of those people. I don't want to live in a community where I don't have police, especially a large community. There has to be some sort of law enforcement system, whatever that system is, and I'm using police generally. Our men and women in uniform work very hard. They take their oath to protect and serve, and that is what we expect them to do. Protect and serve, not abuse, not brutalize, not murder. And I'm a little wound up because on my drive here I was listening to a program with new video footage that was released about the Sandra Bland incident. I am concerned. And I also feel that as a black woman, I should not always have to be the voice that raises these issues and speaks to these things when they come up. But we all have some ownership and responsibility in trying to build a community where all of us, citizens, law enforcement, are all protected, can do our jobs, feel safe, feel respected, feel involved. I started out with thanking the mayor and the whoever at the city level for releasing the footage, because we know that too often what happens is footage gets, or video gets doctored. You get a piece here, you get none. All of a sudden the tape was destroyed or the video camera wasn't working. So I appreciate them releasing it so that the right conversations can happen and we can see some amount of change. I have family members who are law enforcement. So I want to emphasize, I am not knocking law enforcement. And I know there are people out in this community who are watching and listening who are going to think ill of me because I said that. But yes, I did. You will find that I will always be the person who will speak my mind. But I know that we are out of place, and we are out of place in our community from dealing with the issue of our own deputies with regard to ICE. And now this issue in our community and in previous years, what has happened and continue to happen, we cannot sit by and be silent. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie. I'll get Henry and then Anna.
Well, following that, I just want to announce that tomorrow is Slope Day at Cornell. And so you should avoid Cornell campus tomorrow. But again, it's the end of the year, and it's a big celebration on campus. That's all.
Thanks, Henry. Anna?
I just wanted to acknowledge and witness, Leslin, your statements. Thank you. Exceptionally beautiful. I wasn't going to say anything, but I was listening to the comments that were made in public comment and then the comments that were made on the floor for us. And I just want to add that my experience with all of you, and I want to make it publicly known, is that we aren't unaware of what the community is asking, the community that has showed up. What the community that has showed up here is asking, that they are asking for a moratorium. They're asking us not to expand. I would also acknowledge that many times people who do not have the prevailing or at least the loudest message often don't show up. So I do want to communicate, at least for myself, that I am hearing many different sides about the airport and not just the message that we hear on the video or what people will see on the video. And so I do want to make that clear. That is what I'm hearing, a wide variety of perspectives, a wide variety of needs. And oftentimes I'm told, and this is the hardest part of being a legislator, you aren't standing up for what I want, and therefore I no longer trust you. I respect that that is coming from a very emotional place. I respect that that person is feeling very strongly about their perspective. It makes my job and our job very, very difficult, but I hold it as my highest responsibility to remember and recognize that I make a decision for everybody who I represent. And not only everybody I represent, but everybody you all represent, because any decision I make is for everybody. So I weigh this very, very, very carefully. I am not going to say that there isn't any risk involved in the decision that we're making. There will be a Customs and Border Patrol employee at the airport. There are advantages to the work that we're doing. Every airport in upstate New York is getting an overhaul, funding from the state. Ours is falling way behind, and the impact on the economy is not just Cornell, even though they're one of the biggest employers in the state. Our job is to minimize the risk while recognizing the needs that it is also simultaneously fulfilling. My experience of my colleagues, all of you, have been dynamic conversations to try and do just that. Minimize the risk while recognizing the need for what we're doing at the airport. So So I hear when people say they want to be included and they don't feel it's transparent, and we tell them, give us a call or show up at public comment, we want transparency. That isn't what they're asking for, and we may not be able to meet their needs. So let's just be honest about that. If we are having meetings, they have elected us. We will do our job to the best of our ability. We will include them. We have done public forums. We have done private meetings. We will continue to do any of those meetings that are asked. I will go to any single one that's asked for. In the context of what governance is appropriate, we will make that happen. And where it isn't appropriate, collectively we won't. That may not make everyone happy, and we need to be okay with that. So for anybody who's listening, if we aren't meeting every need that you want and every need that you're demanding, I apologize. That's where elections come in. I recognize that. I still believe that everybody is weighing all of the information that they're getting. So I just want to bring some balance and extra insight for myself, at least, into this. Thanks.
Thanks, Anna. I agree with that very wholeheartedly. Annie, then Leslie, did you have a hand up again? And I'm going to take a shot, too. Okay.
I just want to clarify actually something that Anna said. Did you mean to say that there's going to be a Customs and Border Control official there?
Customs and Border Patrol employee will be stationed at the customs facility that we will build, that will be on private property, that will be on Tompkins County property, but will be a federal employee that we will contract out, and we will be paying for their salary.
But they would be doing custom.
They will be doing customs, but they will be from the department that is Customs and Border Patrol.
From that department, but we're having a customs official.
Correct.
Leslie?
Well, all right, I'm going to bring some fun stuff. I want to very quickly let folks know that in the spirit of democracy, the school board elections are coming up, so we want to encourage people to get out and vote. School board candidates here in the Ithaca City School District. I know there are three incumbents, I believe, who are running. There is a forum with those candidates tomorrow Wednesday evening from 6 to 8 at GIAC. It's a really good opportunity to sit around and have a dialogue. It's not just ask a question, they have 2 minutes to answer sort of thing. It is a real facilitated dialogue with these candidates. So if you're able to attend, please do come out from 6 to 8 tomorrow at GIAC. And on a fun note, for those of you who know me, know that on it's a weekend of fun stuff. On Saturday, Kitchen Theater fundraiser. I will be there trying to help raise some funds for one of our arts institution here in this community. We cherish our arts. It's their spring lip sync battle fundraiser, and I'm happy to participate. And it's not too late to donate to my campaign. Doesn't matter if you go online and you saw we've met our goal. It is a fundraiser for the theater, so the more you donate, it's the more goes to the Kitchen Theater. It doesn't come to me. So thank you for supporting. Thank you for coming out and helping out the Kitchen Theater. So just want to share. Lip Sync Battle, 7 o'clock, I believe, on Saturday the 11th. I'll be there shaking, rattling, and rolling, so come on over.
So if anybody's on Facebook and saw Leslie's costume thing, are you going to wear that to the next budget committee? Okay. All right. Just a couple of things. Then we have our airport director to give us a presentation. I agree with so much of what everybody has said, and that stuff is more complicated than it appears on the outside. When I think about my first campaign brochure and the things I campaigned on, like, oh my goodness, I was just, wow, I didn't know anything. So not to say in any sort of way of arrogance that we know better, but we know different. We know different things, and we hear from a lot of different people on every issue. So it was really important that we listen, but listening and agreeing aren't the same thing. We have to make up our own minds. We have to sort through all the input we get, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we listen, that we agree with what we hear at the microphone. So I know that's frustrating for the public. I've been there on the other side of the microphone too, and that can be, that can feel extremely frustrating. But I do hope people, on balance, will perceive that we are a body that works honestly and hard and tries to get it right. I also want to acknowledge what you said, Mike, about the media, and acknowledge the member of the media who is here. Celia Clark is here from WSKG. Hello, Celia. Hey. We are beyond thrilled that WSKG has a studio in Ithaca on Aurora Street. It is perhaps my favorite source of the news. A trusted source of news. And I really, I'm not just saying that because you're here. It's really true. I'm a member, and I think public media serves a vital function, and we're very lucky that you're here tonight, that you're here often. So thank you very, very much. I did hear a couple of NPR stories about the lack of, when local newspapers close, what follows in the next 2, 3, 5 years tends to be, and people have calculated statistics on this, tends to be elections that are less contested. That there, it is much more, it's very common that after local reporting disappears, you see fewer election, local elections where there's any kind of a contest. And I think that's really telling. And the way they describe it is that because of the lack of the local story, the local reporting, and I've had this experience where people in my district will can tell me chapter and verse of the latest federal bill and the latest act of the Supreme Court and the this and the that, but they think they live in Ithaca, in the city of Ithaca, not in the town of Dryden. That's how disconnected people can be from their local government, from their from what's going on locally. And when there's a lack of coverage from the local papers, and they particularly, this story was particularly about newspapers, then people don't know what's going on. They don't know enough to question the folks who are leading their governments. So thank you, Celia. Thank you, WSKG. All right, lots more to cover tonight. We haven't even gotten started. So I would like to invite Mike Hall, our airport director, to come over to the table. And we're going to pull the screens down. Thank you, Mike, for being here. And thank you, Mike, for listening to the community and working with everybody. Microphone towards you, Mike. Thanks.
How's that? Is that better?
It's great.
Okay. Thanks for making time for me this evening. Offer a perspective on the airport project. We're halfway there. We started in the fall, and we're going to cut the ribbon between Thanksgiving and Christmas. The place is at the nadir of disruption right now. Practically everything's torn up there. If any of you would like a personal tour, be happy to show you around. But it looks like a construction site, and it'll start coming back together in about 2 months' time. So just as a reminder, this is what we're talking about. In all of upstate New York, we are the one county that's growing, creating jobs, building an economy, and our neighbors are very fortunate that we have that focus, because 15,000 of them every day have a chance to come into Tompkins County and go to work. I believe very strongly that the reason we have this economy and a bright future is that Tompkins and Queens are the two most diverse counties in the state of New York. And that diversity brings us strength. This was mentioned this evening. Sometimes it's a little complicated because we have a lot of different viewpoints out there. But thank goodness we do. And I believe that's what's behind the strongest economy in upstate New York. And here's why. We are part of a global ecosystem here in Tompkins County, and we're a destination. And people from all around the world come here, and they don't come here on a canal boat or a railroad or an interstate. A lot of them come through the airport, bringing with them the richness of their life experiences in other parts of the world. And Leslin said it very well this evening. We have the community we choose to build. And when people in our community, perhaps feeling empowered by the current political times and the lack of need for, quote, political correctness, speak inappropriately or act inappropriately, we need to break the silence and challenge them and keep our community the very special place that it is. And we're human beings. You know, it's not easy. It's not a destination. It's a constant journey. But the airport's a big part of that journey, in my opinion. This is the immediate impact of the project up there. Something around $30 million worth of capital investment, 190 construction jobs. I say every time I speak to this, there's a project labor agreement in place. These are union jobs. The wages are better than a living wage. We've had a very positive experience with that arrangement. We've got highly qualified people, good safety standards. It's worked out very well for us. And if you take the $30 million and mix it around through the kind of formulas that TCAD uses, the additional impact, you know, people buying sandwiches and spending money in the economy is 22. So it's someplace north of a $50 million impact just around this project. So we talk about economic impact, and the airport is a tool for economic development. And I've got three cameo shots here of local businesses, each of whom relies heavily on the airport in order to maintain their business activity in our community. And if we didn't have the access that we have, they'd be going elsewhere, and we wouldn't be the strength of economy that we have. So there's Rosie, software company, food ordering business.
I'm sorry, Mike, go back and read the quote, the quotes from each of these.
Okay. Yeah. The ongoing upgrades to the Ithaca Airport are critical to the future success of the business community and startup ecosystem of Tompkins County, so says Nick Nikitas. And then Ursa Space Solutions, also here, a global customer base. And their comment is that the upgrades to the Ithaca Airport enable Ursa to stay connected to our customers, investors, and business partners in the U.S. and abroad. The Ithaca Airport is critical to our success. Now, we're not critical to the success of every business in the community, but we are critical to some of the important startup businesses. And a brand new one that had a ribbon cutting this week, Finger Lakes Helitours. Andrew has come back to Ithaca, having graduated from Ithaca College, he and his wife. And as he says, it was originally a retirement plan to come back here, but it's now the business plan. I'm investing in bringing people to our community so they can fall in love just as I did. Now, if you add all this up over 10 years, this is kind of what it looks like. Obviously, there are no absolutely direct connections. But this is a 10-year projection of the entrepreneurial community, like the people we just introduced to you, and the growth that will take place here as a result of continuing to support those activities. And that's a quick update. We're ahead of schedule, under budget, and we're working. What's that? Oh, this slide?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember, that's those are all kind of soft numbers because that's the way economic projections are. But they do support a continuation of the fact that we are the job creator and the strong economy in upstate New York. And I think, as you all are aware, many of these new businesses are very supportive of the mega trends for the future that we're concerned about, energy, carbon footprint, all those broad social concerns. Our industry is pretty supportive in terms of being a clean industry.
The soft numbers, I mean, those are the numbers that TCAD uses. These numbers came from TCAD. This is the way they do economic projections. And
that's correct, yeah. We wanted to use them so we'd be consistent. You know, I could have figured something out, but I'm not a professional, and so TCAD is the go-to reference. And that way we're comparing apples to apples,
right,
these numbers.
Thank you very much, Mike. Any questions? Discussion? Mike Sigler, then Annie.
I just want to say the Helitours thing is really cool. Go check it out. It is not actually that expensive. I mean, it's expensive, not going to lie, but it's not, you know, you're not like, oh, my God, I'll never be able to do this. But very cool, very nice man, and his wife was there and his children. And it's a four-seater Robinson helicopter. Just a little bit about airplanes. You have to get what's called a 100-hour check. He checks it every 50 hours, which is awesome. So, and you know, it's interesting, just on a micro scale, right? That's a huge investment for him, you know, the helicopter. And all the time he had to spend to get the training to fly people is another level. And so you have, you know, thousands of dollars, you know, to go into this one company. It's going to employ one person. But it doesn't, though. It employs the guy that also works on the helicopter who has to do that 150-hour, you know, that check. And then everybody that's going to get to enjoy our area and spending money right there, and great taxpayers. Now, congratulations on that, too. That was a neat little ribbon cutting. So,
Annie, then Deborah, then Anna.
Thank you, Mike, for the presentation and for helping gather that information. So it sounded like the first $22 million you said in additional economic activity, so that was during construction?
Correct. Yeah, that's okay. The one-year impact of this project.
Okay.
Could you go back to that slide?
Sure.
And I had one more question after that.
There we go.
And then so we've heard people in the community often say that it's a Customs and Border Patrol person or office that are going to be at the airport, and I want to make sure that I'm knowing and saying the right information. Can you help me clarify that again?
Sure. First of all, the Department of Homeland Security is very diverse, including, among other things, the Coast Guard, the Immigration Enforcement People, or ICE as they're referred to, Customs and Border Patrol, within Customs and several other departments as well. Within Customs and Border Patrol, there are customs inspectors and Border Patrol agents is a good way of thinking about it. The Border Patrol's job is to work on the border and make sure people come through the port of entry, which is where the customs inspector is. So in our case, we're not on a border, and you can't fly in here from an international destination legally without being pre-cleared. So we don't have a Border Patrol concern here. We have an inspection concern, and that inspection concern is quite broad. It includes having the proper paperwork to enter the United States. It also involves agricultural waste. I think you recall a few years ago the Mediterranean fruit fly found its way into the country. So there's actually a secure waste disposal facility in the building. All those things that you've experienced when you've crossed the border. But the difference is if you drove across at the Peace Bridge or you came across down in San Diego, you know, you were more intermingled because you were right at the border. And people, you know, the intent was to push you through the port of entry rather than letting you go around and enter illegally without going through the port of entry. So we're really about customs inspection. And the you know, the Department of Homeland Security, we've got something like 16 TSA agents. Those are all part of Department of Homeland Security, and they're the people that screen you before you get on an airplane. So I think the impact of adding a customs inspector is minimal, and I think that it's very controllable from a county point of view, as we've spoken before. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, that we approach this without due care and concern, but I also believe that we've got the cards here at the county level for many reasons, as we've talked before, to manage this in a way that is positive to a community that is actually a destination, a global destination. Half of the people flying in this airport are coming here to visit Tompkins County, to go to school here, to take part of the natural wonders and what have you. That's very unique. The rest of the upstate airports, it's 30% coming in and 70% leaving to spend money someplace else. So that also fits with the fact that we are the globally diverse community that we are. Did that get your question?
Yes, yeah, I think so. So, excuse me. So it's a customs inspector.
Correct.
Not a border patrol.
No, and you know, I say this, and this is anecdotal, but it's true. The sheriff and state police don't get along all that well. That's human nature. Air Force pilots, they're fighter pilots, and they're all the rest. And so it is a little bit of a stretch to assume that because you work from the Department of Homeland Security, you're busy out there, you know, kibitzing with all your other Homeland Security employees. They are stovepiped like every organization is stovepiped. That's human nature. And I've checked with a number of airports, and including Seattle, which was mentioned earlier, and nobody has said to me that Customs was doing anything other than Customs. And they're all busy with their own job.
Okay, one last thing. I wanted to thank you for, I know we're not ready to, the MOU, figuring that out totally isn't ready to, you know, right in the pipeline yet, and I appreciate you taking in all the information that we've been sending your way from us, our concerns, and from the public.
Okay, I just want to mention that we had somebody from the Department of Homeland Security helping our ITS and Board of Elections people. You know, Deb, Anna, Henry, and the Mike Lane.
Well, I wanted to thank Michael for coming yet again, explaining why it's a good idea to grow our airport. But I also wanted to say that my heart was just warmed to hear Mike Sigler do a free commercial for a new business.
Mike brings them in, I'll set them up, you know.
Anna?
Thank you, Mike, as always. And I know we are all calling you kind of outside of the context of this, of these meetings, asking you a million questions, so thank you for your patience. I might throw a few hard ones at you, but I know you can handle them, so I'm just going to run with it. One, hopefully, is not that hard. Have you heard any word about the federal grant at all? Do we have any context or sense of the timeline for that?
There is considerable administrative or bureaucratic activity that is hopeful. However, the actual announcement is a political announcement, and nothing's official until that takes place.
Okay, thank you. A second question. I'm hearing a lot from constituents. I know my colleagues are as well. This is not a difficult question. This is just a logistics question. You know, we don't trust you anymore because you never told us this was happening. You made the decision and, you know, never made any public comment about it. I know, you know, you've heard that as well. Can you give us a sense, particularly for those who are watching, what the timeline has been? When did this start? It started with an application to the state that already included the international airport component, and then the first presentation you did to us officially, publicly, was when, about a year and a half ago?
We're 3 years down the trail. We briefed the legislature. Well, first of all, airports are an infrastructure issue. and traditionally infrastructure is handled to a large degree by federal and state monies. So the governor, in response to spending a lot of money downstate on the airports and being criticized, put out a $200 million competition for upstate airports. And we put the application in 3 years ago, right about now. That application was briefed before it was submitted, and then we updated. Yes, yeah, and you know, we updated the legislature a number of times as we sat with bated breath and wondered if we were going to get our infrastructure issue taken care of. And it's very important, by the way. The terminal is 40% larger. The operations count at the airport is going to be about the same. The utility consumption by the terminal is vastly reduced, enough to power seven businesses or 70 homes, if you want a real simple number. So the infrastructure upgrade is really more making a 1994 building into a much more environmentally friendly, efficient 2019 building.
And I really appreciate you saying that, because this environment, obviously, as you know, is something I care about. A lot of people in the audience also cared about it. You've brought up the possibility of electric airplanes.
We are building the electric airport of the future as our vision. There's considerable potential for solar power to run the airport. It'll take a few years to get there. As I talk about that, I would also say that the first electric training aircraft are just now being certified, and they cost 10 cents on the dollar to operate over their reciprocating engine counterparts that we've known all of our lives. So there's a lot of potential here to do a better, more efficient job of serving the traveling public and the training public, because the biggest issue we have nationally and even globally right now is a shortage of pilots. And so all that's trending in a positive direction. You know, we won't see more flights. We'll see bigger aircraft making those flights.
I think that's really important, that we're not necessarily looking for a greater number of flights in, but greater size so that it's more efficient. Martha, may I ask one more question?
Sure.
This is the hard one that I was saving for last. We have discussed in the past reasons why we would terminate the MOU. And you have said some of those publicly. People have asked for them. Could you talk about that a bit?
Well, reasons that we would terminate the MOU are the business of the legislature, not the airport. And what I've said in the past is that we have that control. We are reimbursing a federal salary for a customs inspector, and we are providing a facility for the customs inspector, and it's a county building on county land. So if this county legislature ever reaches a point where it feels that we are not being done justice by this activity, we can just stop paying and send them a termination notice. And either one would get them out of here. You could avoid a termination notice, or you could complain about that, but we stop reimbursing the salary, it's over. So I think there's an extraordinary degree of control within this body, and that leaves me comfortable with recommending this this change to the airport to become an international airport. And I might add that in addition to general aviation up to 20 passengers, we will be able to receive a pre-cleared airliner, and had some discussions with Air Canada about Toronto service where they clear U.S. Customs in Toronto before they fly into the United States. There's some economic challenges there, but it does open up a whole new possibility for the airport.
Okay, Henry, and then Mike Lane.
I guess I have a difficult question to ask. You've heard that this airport is mostly for the University on the Hill, and so I'd like to know whether you have any of the numbers that the economic impact from Cornell.
I don't have a direct connection there. I think that it's unfair to say that this happened because of Cornell. Cornell is hugely globally diverse. They spend $1 billion a year in our local economy, and being able to travel globally is important to them, but this was not their initiative. This was our initiative in the sense of being supportive as opposed to them coming here and saying, well, we've got to expand the airport. Believe me, they need the airport. There are no – Cornell is a top 20 global university. There are no other top 20 global universities that I'm aware of that are not in a large metropolitan area. So there you go. You know, they've got to have connectivity. But to an equally great degree, the many businesses that we have, as we highlighted in the report, require that connectivity also. And as I said then, we don't have an interstate. We don't have canal boats. We don't have a railroad. We got an airport. So that's how it all fits together. But this is not a Cornell initiative.
I got to say something about that. I don't understand quite how Cornell is not us. I came here because I was I went to Cornell, and I've been here 36 years, a little longer than the 2.5 I spent as a student. I'm pretty sure many, many of the people who consider themselves Tompkins County residents, lifelong, whatever, would not be here, would not have chosen to come or stay, but for the academic community that creates a quality of life that's rather different than Elmira, say. Not to pick on Elmira, but, you know. I mean, the Cornell is as much of our community as Ithaca College is, as Tompkins Cortland Community College is, as Cougar Medical Center is. Cornell has 9,000 employees. I don't understand how they are other. Cornell is us. We are all the things that our community is, and that includes Cornell as much as it includes, you know, OAR with 6 employees or however many there, you know. So I just don't understand that argument. So, all right, Mike Lane.
This question comes directly from a constituent who asked it to me, and I said I didn't know the full answer, and I would pass it on to you tonight. When the customs inspector is not inspecting, what will he or she be doing?
Keeping the place pretty clean. There's also something I'm working through right now. This activity is highly stovepiped, and it didn't always be that way. Right now, the inspector has to be at Ithaca. We have extended the invitation to Corning Aviation, which does quite a bit of international flying in support of Corning Incorporated, that we'd like to work with them and share the inspector just to get the workload up a little higher. But it's not, let's put it this way, Josh Nally puts a lot more hours in during the week than this customs inspector is going to. So, unless we can share it around the southern tier, which we're very interested in doing.
Dan.
Something that I've been saying is that when people ask about this, I say the customs inspector will deal with passengers as they come in from internationally, and also with international cargo. How accurate am I being? And could you describe that a little further, the cargo part of it?
Well, again, the global supply chain of local industries here is significant. And I'll use one example, which is BorgWarner. They bring a lot of parts in from overseas manufacturing and put them together to make their chains. Sometimes those parts come in their corporate airplane or in some chartered freight operation, and they'll be able to come directly to Ithaca. Ithaca now, as opposed to having to stop someplace else, clear customs, and then come here. So it does make a more favorable situation relative to the global supply chain. We have a plan. We'll be building a new firehouse in a couple of years, and one of the interesting repurposing opportunities of the current crash fire rescue building is small international package receipt, because so much of our community is small stuff. You know, we're not bringing in big stuff from overseas. We're bringing in transistors, if you will, to date myself, chips, I guess, these days. So there's a considerable potential for international freight to support the local industry.
Henry?
You said that in terms of flights to the airport, that the planes will be bigger and not more of them. How about for the flights coming into the flying into the customs house or going through customs? How much would that increase?
There will be some uptick, no doubt, you know, in that. I'm just conveying right now that the big piece of this project is an infrastructure upgrade of an air passenger terminal that was badly out of date and not efficient in terms of, you know, its green footprint, if you will, and we've fixed all that. We would expect airport operations to grow over time, but not spectacularly, let's put it that way, you know, 10% over a few years, not 100% over a year type thing.
Okay.
And the thing about the airplanes, the challenge we have is nobody's building 50-seat jets anymore. So we're going to have to fill a 65-seater here pretty soon. And then we're going to have to fill a 90-seater. And there won't be more frequency. They'll just be more efficient airplanes, better fuel per mile burn, that sort of thing. We expect to start seeing that happen, you know, within a year or two. Because the 50-seat airplanes are just like the old 37-seat turboprops. You're getting hard to find them.
Okay, can I have one more question? I know that you just added another flight to Dulles. Are
Correct.
There any other anticipated flights that you're going to be adding in the next year?
Yes. What I can talk about is I expect that we're in a situation that's parallel to Charlotte, North Carolina right now, which is where Americans flying us one day a week. Charlotte's building a new terminal with a bunch of new jet bridges. Does that sound familiar? And when they're done in the fall and we're done in the fall, assuming we don't have any more big issues like the 737 that are causing the airlines headaches trying to cover with smaller airplanes, I expect we're going to go to every day a week service to Charlotte, which will be a big plus. That'll probably look a little bit like United leaving Newark for Washington. I expect that Philly, which is really very close to us, probably will be less a part of the plan going forward. But Charlotte's a great hub. And there's more. I can talk to you about that in the executive session.
Very much.
Deborah.
One last question.
I doubt it.
I can be hopeful. So isn't it true that actually it's two questions. Isn't it true? Isn't it true that a plane uses more fuel at takeoff than when it's up in the air?
Correct.
So
same as your car. When your car is accelerating, you look at your little mileage thing and it goes down. You settle in at a nice steady cruise and it improves.
So by eliminating the need for a plane that's carrying something from overseas, whether it's a person or cargo, eliminating the need for that plane to stop somewhere else and then take off again to come here, isn't that to some extent reducing the amount of fuel that those flights are going
to? It is. There are a lot of pluses to being able to come direct. First of all, you were coming here in the first place. You might as well get here. And then the fewer operations there are, the less wear and tear there is on the airplane, the fuel issue, the tires, all that sort of stuff. So it's a considerable plus for somebody that's going to fly to Ithaca from overseas to come here directly.
And will somewhat reduce the impact on the environment?
Well, it will a couple of ways. Today's airplanes are unrecognizable several decades ago. The improvements in efficiency have been huge, and they will continue. The next set of aircraft carrying passengers, maybe not the next set, but close to the next set, will be electric motors driving a fan. Everybody is moving. When you go to an airport or an airline conference, everybody's moving to electric power. We have proposed to our three carriers that they use us as a test bed to put electric tugs on the ramp. That's a perfect application for an electric vehicle because you're never more than a few hundred feet from an outlet and you're pulling those baggage carts around. And when you pull into the unloading area, you don't bring a bunch of fumes with you. And we've gotten some real positive response, so I think you're going to see that part of the solar-powered airport of the future. Yes, the trends are all positive. There's a lot that needs to be done, but the industry is moving that direction, which is good.
Thank you.
All right, I have a couple, which is quickly. I hope you'll send us the slides. Just send them to Kathy, and okay, so we'll have all the numbers that you showed us. When we do a bazillion, that's a technical number, a bazillion contracts a year, and this legislature doesn't review contracts. It's like if you think we have a lot to read now. So the idea that you and Jason are going to be working on, I suppose with Jonathan, as you know, we'll be working on that MOU or MOA. That's completely normal, but I understand that you'll nevertheless be, and that we're not involved in wordsmithing it, but nevertheless you will be bringing it to facilities at some when it's ready or when for comment, and you know.
Yes.
Did you want to add anything?
No, I will say that that's accurate. That's what we'll do. I will say that my communication with some of the members that spoke earlier today was a little off, and that we met with them. We received some of the comments that they had. We advised them that when the final MOU comes into play, we'll be able to consider that language as similar to what the county legislature is their thoughts of the expectations of that MOA. We have not received a copy of it yet. The one that we had before was just a boilerplate example, and when we receive it, we'll start that process, as we do with any other type of agreement that we usually have. Expectation-wise is generally, and speaking with Mike and Tom Horth from CNS, you know, this process usually doesn't start to when the customs facility is, you know, 80 to 85% complete. And that's probably when we'll start that conversation with customs. So when that happens, we'll take those comments into consideration. Mike already stressed, I think, the most valuable part of that MOA, and that's the ability to terminate it, which is solely rests with your authority. And we'll go from there. And when we have that process started, we'll communicate that out to everyone. So, you know. We don't have anything to talk about yet until we get a copy of it, and that's when we'll start the process.
Okay, thank you. And Mike, just last thing, the off the top of your head, do you know how many employments we have a year?
Roughly 100,000.
100,000.
Correct. Yeah, we peaked at 120 2010. That's before the accident in Buffalo that started the pilot shortage, because now to fly an airliner you've got to have many more hours of experience. And I would say that 120 to 150 is a reasonable expectation over time, and that's passengers. So again, a 50-seat airplane becoming a 90-seat airplane is almost twice as many passengers on the same movement. And so you're going to see, I said to Henry earlier, you're not going to see many more operations, but you're going to see a big bump in passengers as the gauge of the airplane goes up over time.
So 100,000, that's, and you said 50-50 coming and going.
So 50,000 people are flying in. I'm sorry, it's 100,000 in, 100,000 out. So it's so 100,000 people are coming into this county through the airport. It's enplanements. It's getting on the plane, not 100,000 enplanements and 100,000 deplanements, you know, more or less. They're not exactly the same number, but they're close.
100,000 round trips, let's say.
200,000 round trips.
200,000 round trips.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
100,000 people board through our airport. That's generally considered to be this more or less the same number that got off.
Okay.
Coming in.
All right. So fair to say, like, 100,000 people a year like that we have the airport.
I think that's correct, yes, because they fly in here.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Anything else? Mike, thank you so very much for all of this for shepherding this complex project while the operation continues. So why don't I just have us do the consent agenda so you can go home because your items are on the consent agenda. First, are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Anna?
I think the flag...
That's on consent. That's we'll just pull that when we get.
Okay.
All right. So if you have anything to pull, Yeah, it is. The policies are on consent. No, they're not.
No,
you're right. Under GL.
Okay.
Resolution.
No.
Got
I thought
it.
They were. They're not.
Never mind. All right. I will read, and as I go, let me know if you have anything to pull. Resolution A, adoption of cash management and investment policy, ID 8540. Resolution B, authorization of New York State Power Authority, Master Agreement, Tompkins County and Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit Incorporated, ID 8625. Resolution C, award of 2019 Tourism Capital Grants, ID 8548. Resolution D, authorization to approve a construction contract for South Street Extension Slope Stabilization Project, Town of Ulysses, ID 8570. Resolution E, approval of funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation for PIN 3756.61, Culvert Replacement Project, Highway Department, ID 8569. Resolution F, authorizing supplemental agreement number 15 with CNS Companies for General Aviation, U.S. Customs and Border Protection Facility, Design and Bidding Services, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 8565. And Resolution G, you have some sort of clarification changes in your red folder, and there's a number that was a typo that I will tell you, but here's the title. So it's Resolution G, as in your red folder, authorizing supplemental agreement numbers 12A and 14. With CNS Companies for the Supplemental Design and Bidding Services, Terminal Building Expansion and Security Improvements Phase 2, and Terminal Building Expansion and Security Improvements Phase 2, Construction Phase Services, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 8563. And the number next to NYSDOT UAI grant should be $1,280,000. It's now $2,280,000. It's a typo. It should be $1,280,000. Then Resolution H, authorizing a public hearing on local law number whatever of 2019, amending Chapter 32 of the Tompkins County Code, ID 8618. And Resolution I, setting a public hearing on the recommendation of the County Agriculture and Farmland Protection Board to add 525 acres of land in the town of Lansing to the Tompkins County Agricultural District, District 1, ID 8578. And I have appointments. Where'd they go? All the appointments you've done. Thank you. They're buried. Okay. To the Environmental Management Council, Brian Eden. To the Air Services Board, David Prunty. And the Stop DWI Advisory Board, Ryan Slocum. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda, please? Dave moves, Deborah seconds. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Before I call a 10-minute recess, I want to again thank Celia Clark for sticking it out through the entire conversation. Thank you all very much. Let's take a 10-minute break and then be back in your seats, please, at like 5 of. Thank you. We're back in session.
And Sean is watching.
There's nothing else to do in Texas?
Sean has been on like three meetings by speakerphone. I think she misses us, right?
Oh, terribly.
Terribly, okay. All right, I have a couple of things to report to you.
First, as I emailed you, I'm tonight appointing a couple of committees, special committees for the complete census count. I'm delighted to say Mike Lane has agreed to chair the committee. I'd like to have Leslyn be vice chair, and Dave, Amanda, and Shauna will fill out the committee. For the Tioga Street Project, Glenn Morey will be chair. I'd like Rich John to be vice chair. And the rest of the committee will be myself, Ann, and Mike Lane. And so I'm appointing those, and we'll work with staff to find schedules, find time, meeting times for those to get started. Thank you all for taking on those extra responsibilities. Very, very important committees. And two appointments from the chair for the Workforce Development Board, Kate Shanks Booth and Jack Lance. I also want to tell you on my way here, I got a call from Barbara Lifton, Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton, who said, who was in Albany and said she had talked to the chair of the local governments committee, which is where the our home rule bill for housing, the ability to spend money on affordable housing would go. She said the chair, his name is Assembly Member Thiel, I can't remember his first name, he has agreed to support our measure, and they're going to take it through the committee and take it to the floor of the assembly. I think the big deal is that the committee chair, the relevant committee chair, is supportive and is going to take on the measure. And she will work with Senator O'Mara's office to make sure it goes through the Senate as well. It's already been introduced in the Senate. So that was a big deal. The assembly is where it got stuck last year. So that's a big deal. We also have the emergency surcharge bill has been introduced in both Assembly and Senate. I think that's less controversial, but I'm not sure of that. Jason's nodding. Should be, we hope.
Should be less controversial.
Less controversial. There's Onondaga County has a similar piece of legislation for this year. So, on the third county court, I updated you last time. I think that basically our best hope for this position is going to be the Court of Claims appointment. So we're still working with the Office of Court Administration to make sure that our needs are understood and that the hope that they'll be expressed to the governor's office as a priority for when he makes appointments in June. So, and I am delighted to say I have a couple of other things to share. Dan Klein, will you come on up?
Maybe.
I have a certificate of appreciation to Dan Klein in recognition of 5 years of outstanding service to Tompkins County, including your choice of a particular gift from the Human Resources Department. Thank you, Dan. For 10 years of service, of outstanding service to Tompkins County, Michael Sigler. Come on up. And another different set of gifts for the you're vested. You got other. Hey, come here, Mike. Come on. And one Michelle Potteroff Coco. For, okay, wait for it, 35 years. Michelle was 7 when she started here.
I was going to say, did you mean to say she's 35 years old?
Thank you, Michelle.
In the chamber.
Thank you, Michelle. You've been in the mental health department and what else?
DSS,
but here for a long time. We're really, really grateful for your service and your friendship, and thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to have you. You're part of a wonderful team. Thank you. That's my report. Any questions? Okay. County Attorney. No, wait. County Administrator. You're next, right? Jason Molino. Wow.
Other chairs appointments?
I did the chairs ones. Yeah.
I'll make this a quick update. Last week, we had the first shared services panel meeting with community members. It was following the TCOG meeting. About a dozen people came out for it, went through the process that we're going to follow for the shared services plan that has to be developed by the end of the year. I'll forward the presentation to Kathy if you haven't received it yet, just so you can see the timeline. Series of meetings set up over the course of the next 3 or 4 months. We're also going to send a communication out later this week that will link to a LaserFiche form, so people, when they want to submit or they have suggestions to submit, they can complete it on a LaserFiche form, so it can be easily put into a simple spreadsheet so we can review that. And then after the first few, probably after the first month or so, we'll begin to reach out to some of those individuals that made submissions and start to try to clarify and narrow down a list of potential items or actions for the shared services plan. And we'll have it in front of you by the fall for comment. You don't actually adopt the plan. It is the panel itself, but you have an opportunity to comment on it. And it'll be done hopefully by October at the latest. That's all I have.
Thanks, Jason. Any questions? Thank you very much. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I have no report, but remember, there are 2 executive sessions, so hurry up.
Yes, sir.
Legal advice.
Legal Game of Thrones tonight? Is that why you want to go?
Aye, aye, Captain. All right.
That was your best report, hands down.
So hurry up.
Finance Director.
I don't have
Rick
to stay
Snyder.
For the executive session, so I'm just going to drag this on.
Oh, go for it.
We have 3 months of sales tax reports in your agenda on pages 8 through 15. I also supplied to you some quick notes on this one-page little cheat sheet that I provided at your desk right prior to the meeting. And you can either follow along with the reports, depending on how good your eyesight is, or just read along with me with the summary. But I was going to start with January and go through that quite quickly. Our portion of sales tax distributions for January was up 6.17%. And that is on top of our best year last year. You'll remember that we had astounding sales tax receipts all throughout the year last year. So we're up 6% for January. If you go to the February, the very next table, you can see that the county's portion of sales tax distributions was down 2%. So that's the first down month that we've had in almost a year, probably about 10 months. And as of the end of February, the year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion was $5.2 million compared to $5.1 million in 2018. So at that point in time, as of February 28th, we were up 2.31% for the year. If you flip to the March table, in that midsection, you can see that sales tax was up 3.65%, which brought our year-to-date total to 2.84%. And the very last chart that looks like all the others, but this one is for the combined first quarter, all 3 months together, you can see that we're up 2.84% for the year, which just happens to be what Jason reported last week to you at the budget kickoff meeting that we had. He was averaging that first quarter receipts to try to project where we would come in for the rest of this year, and then once again into next year. So that's a very good report for the first quarter. There was a lot of speculation when we went through a bit of a downturn there in December and January with different things with the stock market and with the economy, and different factors were weighing in. But all in all, during the first quarter of the year, we're up almost 3%. And then the very last report is the 23-year report, where it shows the historical quarter-by-quarter averages. So you can look at this and you can compare first quarter to other first quarters. we provide this to you so that you have an ongoing data sheet to see how well we're doing both quarter over quarter and year over year. If you flip over on the summary page that I provided for you, there's a back page that shows our casino revenues for the first quarter. We've not had a lot of track history of a record of history on this, but you can see that our first quarter receipts for 2019 were at $489,000. That's compared to first quarter receipts last year of $457,000 and compared to 2017, $369,000. So year-to-date receipts, just looking at one quarter in, are up 6.8% for casino revenues. And I thought you would appreciate having that to look at, especially as we go in deeper into budget season. If you have any questions, I'll take them.
Thank you, Rick. You didn't say the best part. This is that the sales tax report, this is the highest first quarter on record.
Oh, Jason, would you read that?
No.
Oh.
I won't read that.
Jason said that this is the highest first quarter on record.
You never say that.
Rich.
Looking at the casino revenue report, do you think we're seeing enough of trending that in our target for next year we would go above the 1.2 million? It seems like it's fair to say it's at least a $400,000 average per quarter.
We hit 1.7 and 1.9 in the last 2 years. I am almost positive that we're going to be beyond 1.2 for this year and next.
Okay.
It's a high probability of it.
Any other questions? You going to put money on it, Jason?
No, I'm not going to bet on it. I'm not going to put any money on it.
It's okay.
Good, but then I had money on the Kentucky Derby, too, and you saw how that
went. Yeah, okay. All right. Just stay with the fun.
Did you throw the ticket away?
Anything else for Rick? All right. Thanks very much, Rick.
You're welcome.
All right. Looks like we can go to committees, right? Okay. Budget Capital Personnel Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Well, we've met twice. We met on April 19th, and we met just prior to this meeting. We talked about our work plans that going forward based on a lot on our goals. We had a report from our Human Resources Department. Again, we're always paying attention to that and our workforce. We had a much of our work was in the resolutions that we adopted, including the two that we will be taking up tonight about what we're going to set our goals for the budget. And heeding our county attorney's advice, remember our county attorney defends us and keeps us out of jail. We'll keep it a short report tonight.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Do you want to take care of Resolution J?
Certainly do. Establishment of the 2020 County Financial Goal, and I so move.
Seconded by Dave, Glenn Morey.
This is
on your desk you have with the numbers.
Right. So basically what we're doing is setting a goal of an increase in the tax levy of no more than 2.76%, as recommended by our county administrator. And that would include in that an increase in our capital investment of instead of 0.5% increase in the levy, a 0.75% increase in the levy for next year.
Any discussion? I want to just highlight that it's estimated that if this proposed tax levy is met, the additional cost on a median value home in Tompkins County, which is $190,000, will be approximately $10 a year. So, and I also want to point out that we used to have reporters here. This was used to be a big deal, right? To set the tax levy, to start the budget process. And, you know, we have Marsha Lynch, our public information officer. Maybe they figure she gets them everything that they need. They don't have to show up, but which is great, and you do, and thank you, Marsha. But, okay, enough about the media.
Martha, I wanted to say one other thing that I should have, and that is I want to thank the administration and finance for the work on the budget retreat that we did have on the 30th. A lot of work by our county administrator, by Kevin McGuire, by Lisa Holmes and Amy
Hendricks,
sorry, and certainly Rick Snyder helping us put that together. It went very well. I think it was very informative for our group. And so we look forward to a full budget season this year and things working like a well-greased machine.
And Jason and I are presenting at the Human Service Coalition Forum tomorrow morning, so human service agencies will have a chance to hear the same presentation you saw last week. Anything else? Ready to vote on J. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
And I'd move K, establishment of guidelines and fiscal targets for all county budgeting units for the preparation of the 2020 budget. And that is the 2% increase that we're going to allow them to put into their budgets.
Moved by Mike, seconded by Anna. Any discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
Unless there's any questions, that's what I've got.
All right. Anything else? Henry.
I thought that the budget committee was going to deal with the community outreach worker resolution.
That's coming May 17th.
It's coming, I think it'll be in the future.
Oh, next okay. Meeting.
Yes, May 17th.
Next meeting.
Okay.
It went through two committees, right?
Two committees. I thought it was going through the third committee being the floor, but I guess not.
Okay. All right. Okay, next committee, Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
We don't have a report. WDIC will be meeting, I believe, next week. Wednesday. No, two Wednesdays. 2 weeks from now. The 22nd of May. I'm looking at the 22nd of May in my calendar and saying next week. Okay, we'll have a report then.
All right,
but I do have a complaint or a request. I have 5 certificates here for years of service, and I will be collecting my gifts. retroactive collecting.
I know.
WDIC has
been pushing
HR to make this happen, and now the newbies come in and get gifts.
I know. What do you get for
I gave you cough drops.
I'm with you, Leslie. Mike?
Yes, and that was part of the report from our human resources department that there will be these employee recognition gifts based on the number of years of service. And like our chair tonight presented to some folks, and we all asked Leslin's question, you know, what about those of us that have been here? I mean, Michelle ought to get a whole basket full of things based on that. But we were told it unfortunately will not be retroactive.
All right. That means we just got to stay longer, I guess, right? All right. Housing and Economic Development, Anna Kellis, Chair.
We had a very dynamic discussion, probably 45 minutes long or so, with Incremental Development, the organization that's coming. They weren't able to show all of their expertise the evening before, but it really came out during that meeting how much they understand about how incredibly complicated all the moving parts are to do the work that they're doing, from zoning to politics to design to you name it. They understood it through and through, so very excited to work with them. They will be back, what does anybody know, I think in 2 months?
In June.
So hopefully they will come back again and grace us with some more information in maybe a committee. So I'll check in on that one. Our next meeting is at 9:30, Thursday, the 23rd of this month. That's my report.
Thanks, Anna. Any questions? All right. Thank you. Rich John, Public Safety Committee.
Thank you. The Public Safety Committee met on April 18th, and among other things, we received a pretty extensive report from Lance Salisbury, our assigned counsel director, on legislative changes that happened this year. Because of the change in the control of the New York State Senate, there seemed to be a very large amount of criminal justice legislation that actually went through both houses up in Albany, leading to changes in bail reform and discovery that are pretty extensive. This is some of the most sweeping state legislation we've had in this area for a long time. Based on the conversation that we had at the committee between Lance and then our district attorney, Matt Van Houten, and probation, we talked about a lot of the impacts. I think we're in better shape than a lot of other counties because we have already incorporated a lot of what's in this legislation here, particularly in the area of bail reform. We are not putting as many people in jail on bail as a lot of other counties. And we also have these systems outside of our jail to accommodate people who are not held in jail, all of our alternatives to incarceration. This probably will be far bigger deal for those counties that have not developed their ATIs like we have done. But certainly we're looking at what those impacts are for us. Public Safety Committee will meet next week. I believe it's May 16th. And happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rich.
Oh, I did have one other thing, actually. One of the changes in Albany, because we've heard a lot about immigration recently, they changed the length of term on a sentence for a misdemeanor from 1 year to 364 days. And this, obviously, one-day change has significant impact in terms of triggering federal immigration actions. It was an interesting change, and it sort of separates New York State criminal procedure from unintended consequences on the federal level. Sorry, I didn't get that one in.
Okay. Thank you, Rich. Jason?
I just wanted to follow up. The district attorney and I, Lisa, met to talk a little bit more about the discovery changes because there seems to be there's some concern about the changes to discovery making the time frame for the district attorney's office to share discovery material with the defense counsel has been significantly tightened. And Jonathan and I spoke briefly about it as well, and that it'll impact him in similar ways. So we spoke to try to understand what this means for his office. Lance, when he comes back from vacation, Lance and I and Lisa will also get together, and probably the four of us, district attorney as well as assigned counsel, will get together to understand that. One thing Matt did relay is that, you know, we're in much, as he said, much better shape than most counties. There's a pretty open discovery process that they participate in. Now, the biggest challenge is that while the district attorney has responsibility of turning over discovery, many times the documents or records that are going to be requested or turned over, they don't have control over because they haven't yet been produced by outside agencies. So, for example, police reports from perhaps a different agency that hasn't yet been produced by the time frame needed to turn it over to defense counsel is an area where the district attorney gets caught in the middle of things because they don't have the document, yet they can't produce the document, but they're technically held responsible for it. Similar, for example, toxicology reports, those types of things that may take weeks to get done, they won't have the information available. So we're going to continue the dialogue both with assigned counsel, district attorney's office, and try to understand as this continues to transform over the months to come how we may be able to respond to that. Is there a mutual understanding of some of these things? And maybe worth our interest as well to reach out to the judges prior to this being implemented in January so that there's an understanding as to what's within our control, what is not within our control, so that we can adapt to it appropriately. So it's the first of probably several conversations. He was concerned about it, and Lance has also similar comments or concerns about it. But the conversation will continue, and we'll just see how it adapts. I would expect also District Attorneys Association as well as Public Defenders Association to have more information about this as time goes on, as we get nearer to the implementation, which is in January.
Yeah, I certainly said the changes were sweeping. I didn't say they were fully thought out.
There's some fundamental challenges that come with this in terms of just the availability of information, which just isn't available in some of the tight time frames that the statute's put on it. So it's a conversation that'll be ongoing, and we'll try to facilitate a solution that's amicable to everybody involved.
I'd also mention there were some significant changes to the discovery from the defense side that's mandatory, and it'll be interesting to see how that is worked out as well.
I just want to relay that because it's something that may have a budget impact and may not. I think it's too early to tell. The bigger issue is how to comply with the law when you have no control over it. Over the circumstances.
I think more than the budget impact, it probably will impact the ability to satisfy the discovery requirement and whether there's a case that can proceed or not.
Yes.
Yeah.
How does it affect the budget?
Well, it depends if there's an increased demand to collect information and share it quicker. You may have more demand on investigators and paralegal administrative staff to collect those records. I don't know that that's yet to be proven. I think the bigger issue is getting it. Because, like I said, this county is used to a much more open discovery process than most. And it's not, it's not in foreign language, so to speak, where some may have different practices. I think it's just the issue of being able to get the information in order to be able to be shared with defense counsel, and that seems to be the biggest challenge. So we don't know yet, but I just want you to be aware that it's something that we're in open discussion with everybody at the table so we can figure out the solution.
Yeah, I would expect the answer is going to be share it when you receive it.
There's no other alternative to it. I mean, really. The discretion to share it is no longer in existence, so to speak.
Anna and then Henry.
I talked to Matt about this afterwards as far as the budget. That was part of my concern, and he said that it could actually... We may be hearing from him budget season. That's what he was saying, that it could be significant increase in administrative costs for his department to meet those timelines. So I'm curious to hear more about that. But the other question that I had that he didn't know at the time, I'm curious if you've gotten any input, was the requirement is to meet a very specific deadline. Have they outlined a penalty for not meeting that deadline?
Well, I mean, the penalty is the potential that the charges could be dismissed. So there's a series of other alternatives available, such as there can be an appeal for more time. I would imagine that this is going to be litigated in the near future to start to set some precedent with things. But the ultimate risk is that the charges could be dismissed or dropped. Again, the question of if the discovery does not exist, how is that going to be responded to and received, I think is the more practical question to ask. And I have a, following the letter of the law is different than the practical application of it.
Henry?
Yeah, I also talked to Matt, and he said, for example, that videotapes, the body cam footage, takes a long time to process, and that they may need to have more processes to get it done within 30 days. And so that would be a budget increase, that he would need more people to get it done in time.
Right. Okay. Rich, would you tell folks about the Vera Institute this Friday, and then you have a resolution.
Right. Okay. Yes, the Vera Institute is going to come visit this Friday, and they are bringing with them a couple of the New York Giants football players, Anthony Bethea and I think it's
Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas, thank you. They're both in the defensive backfield. I was reading about them. They have both had really successful careers in the NFL, and they want to learn about rural justice. They're taking a trip to Broome County, and they're going to visit with some officials there and see their jail. And they wanted to also visit with us because the Vera Institute said Tompkins County has a different look at things. And I thought this was quite a compliment that we are considered a model to see if you want to see a different way of examining the criminal justice system. We're going to have them have a jail tour, and then we're going to get a chance to sit down and talk about our alternatives to incarceration programs that we run. I anticipate they're going to see some of the people from the College Initiative Upstate, and it should be really fun. So any questions about that?
Okay, thanks.
I have a resolution.
I heard there was one part later that we were invited to or people could go to.
Yes, after the jail tour. I don't know how much room there is there, but it's going to be at the Crash, Fire, and Rescue Building. And I'm trying to remember the time on that. There's
3 o'clock.
Yeah. 3 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah, and Shauna Black was the, you know, was the contact with Vera Institute. Shawnee's still watching. So she really helped set that up, and that was really a lot of work to figure out the logistics of it. So, yeah, 3 o'clock. And the reason with the jail, they just don't have space to have anybody else come.
Yes. Yes, tip of the hat to Shauna. This is a really fun thing.
That's not open to the public, though, right?
I don't believe so, no. There's not enough room for it, and we'll be going at fair speed. But and then I have a resolution, appropriation from contingent fund, replacement pay and terminal pay reimbursement, Sheriff's Office, ID 8556, and I would move it.
It's packet page 78, seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? I'm looking at line 9. The sheriff's office had 10 employees unexpectedly leave employment and collect terminal pay. Deborah?
Yeah, I'd like to move to just remove that unexpectedly.
Okay.
I'd consider that friendly.
Okay. And I'm sorry, who seconded it?
I did. It's okay.
Oh, Dave, that's okay. Okay, so at a line 9, taking on its unexpectedly just explained, it was rather expected that these folks would leave. So, all right, anything else? Short form roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
All right. That's my report.
Thanks very much, Rich. Health and Human Services Committee, Dan Klein, Vice Chair.
Thank you. Still just trying to get over the pettiness shared by fellow legislators about marring our celebration of our anniversary. Okay.
Get a free
capitalism,
wine,
baby.
Get all bent out of shape.
I will try to share my county tote bag with everybody.
Oh, it's a reusable grocery bag. Awesome.
You got a tote bag?
You can bring cookies in it.
Okay, thanks. So let's start with the resolution, and I would like to defer to Amanda Champion, who authored this resolution.
Great, thanks. Yeah, I guess I would move Resolution M in support of New York State Senate Bill 4234, Assembly Bill 6298, which prohibits the sale of dogs, cats, and rabbits by retail pet shops and authorizes space for adoption.
And that's in the revised as in your red folders?
Yes.
Okay. Seconded by Anna. That's document 8621.
And I'll just speak a little bit. So this is something that if we pass this, it would be telling our state Senate and Assembly people that we want them to pass this. Essentially, the bill will stop the pipeline of puppies coming from puppy mills and kittens and rabbits into pet stores. New York has one of the highest concentrations of pet stores that sell puppies. Most puppies and kittens that you would buy in a retail pet shop come from mills. I included, you should have in your red packet, and I sent you all lots and lots of information. There's some facts about what puppy mills are and how terrible they are for animals. And then I also included an article just to give you one taste of what it's really like for these animals. So this bill at the state level would prohibit any New York store from selling puppies, cats, or rabbits that came from anyone, basically. The only animals they'd be able to sell would be rescue animals. So they could contract with their SPCA, like PetSmart does here, and they could bring in rescue animals to sell through that operation. This would not impact, as far as I know, any pet stores in Tompkins County. PetSmart, like I just said, they have animals from a rescue operation. My understanding is that there's a lot of pet stores downstate that get their puppies from puppy mills. So I'm happy to take questions. I feel like I kind of tried to spell it out as clearly as I could. California and Maryland already have this law, and lots of other municipalities have also passed something.
Thanks, Amanda. Anna?
I wanted to thank Amanda for bringing this forward, truly. And I wanted to share a story really quickly. There's a woman who is a constituent in Fall Creek, and I was walking home one night, and I saw her with her two beagles. And one of them looked kind of just super tentative and scared. And I asked her, is she okay? And she said, this is the first time she's ever seen grass. And she was 12. Yeah. And she is a woman who takes beagles, rescues them from mills. And I reached down to pet this dog. And for anyone who has been around animals that have been abused, they tend to flinch. And this dog had been abused so severely to such an extreme that she didn't even flinch. She just stopped still, dead still, and just gave up. And it was one of the most heartbreaking things I've ever seen. I reached out to her a couple months later, and she said, I've rescued many beagles. That's what I do. It's what I love. And her heart was just broken, and I couldn't save her. And she died several months later because she just couldn't live. So if we don't think that this is a really awful thing, you should hang out with my constituent a little bit.
Leslyn, Deborah, and then Amanda.
So I think it bears repeating, Amanda, that folks understand this is not saying that pet stores can no longer sell cute little puppies and rabbits and so on, but that the bill is for them to not sell those that come from the mills. Correct?
Correct.
So if somebody is a breeder,
who has great conditions and they get them from an individual breeder that's different, or if they get them from our SPCA or some animal rescue place like that. So just for folks to know, because I've already gotten the question that no, now why do we have pet stores to sell pets if we're not going to have pets for them to sell? It's a little different. The ones that cannot, the ones that come from the mill. Thank you.
Deborah?
I was just going to make the point that Leslin did. People can still buy purebred animals, but they have to come from breeders, reputable breeders.
Amanda and then Anna?
Annie? Yeah, that's great. Thanks for pointing that out. And the question had come up about the black market when we had talked, and I did a little bit of research. I'm not sure I can fully answer the question, but the internet is already a market. Like, you can go on internet and purchase a puppy from one of these mills, and you may not know where it comes from or how it gets to your house, but that essentially is the black market. I mean, it's possible, and these animals are basically tortured. So there's another sort of black market aspect of like designer dogs, where, you know, the Obamas got a cute little, I don't even remember what it was, but then people...
Portuguese water dog.
Thank you. So then people all over wanted that kind of dog, so these puppy mills were breeding as many of this kind of dog as they could to get out to pet stores, and, you know, most of them were sick. So that's kind of a black market thing. And people can still, you can certainly, if you want to purchase a dog and you have your breeder down the street or across town, like, yeah, you can absolutely still purchase those dogs. This is very much encouraging people, pet stores, to sell them from rescue places.
Okay, we ready to vote? All in favor, please. Annie, go ahead. Sorry,
just two quick stories. My sister just adopted a Labrador that had been used in a puppy mill, and can't remember how old it is, like 6 or 7 years old. And luckily she has another Labrador, and so the other dog is trying to kind of train the dog like it's okay, because the dog is freaking out about everything. It's lived its life on concrete. It never didn't know how to walk on carpet, grass, be around people, to be touched, to be brushed. And so she's slowly working with the dog. And one article that I read when I started looking stuff up after we had this resolution was a story about these folks that found a box of kittens in a dumpster, and the box had 39 kittens in it, which they believe was from a breeder that had too many. They were alive, and they rescued them all. And got them, took quite a bit to try and find places to foster them, but they were about 4 weeks old.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that we have this in front of us. Let's hope it makes somebody do something in Albany. So all in favor, we're ready to vote. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much, Amanda. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys very much.
Dan, you had any other report?
Yeah, just a couple of quick things from our meeting on May 3rd. Dr. Clark, the director of the Office of Human Rights, told us that he is meeting with each new member of the Human Rights Commission. So that's going to take a while. I think there are 16 new members, something like that.
Wow.
So he's, how many? 15? Okay, so that's in process now. We heard from Kate Shanks Booth, the director of County Youth Services, and she presented, she handed out the results of a survey that's done every 2 years in Tompkins County. This is the sixth time it's done. It's for all it's a survey of students in Tompkins County about drug and alcohol use and attitudes towards drug and alcohol and tobacco. 3,700 teenagers took part in this this year. So I have a paper copy. It looks like Anna has one too. It's probably online. If it's not online already, it will be shortly. So if anybody wants to get a copy of that, you certainly can. There's a lot of good information, and it's 6 pages long, a lot of statistics. We also had a discussion about how the county can better support foster families, and so I think we'll have some sort of follow-up on that going forward, hopefully. And our next meeting is Friday, June 7th, 9 o'clock.
All right. Thanks very much, Dan. Any questions? Thank you. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you. We met on April 18th. We considered resolutions that were in the consent agenda for this evening, as well as a capital project review for the Highway Department, including maps that should be online that show the paving projects and construction projects for bridges and culverts this summer. Various capital payment summaries and committee goals. And that's my report. We will meet again on May 16th at 1 o'clock.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions? Deborah.
Dave, I had occasion to be driving through that Burns Road, Coddington, King Road thing. It looks like it's pretty much finished. Was the point of that to improve visibility?
Yes.
And prevent accidents.
Because I have to say that still, when you're trying to turn off of Burns Road onto Coddington, it's very hard to see somebody coming over that hill. I'm wondering if we don't just need a stop sign. I'm sorry.
10 years in the making.
The DOT has been all...
Well, yeah, I was really surprised, though. It's still very difficult to see because there's a rise and then it, you know...
Yeah, I haven't been through there this spring yet.
I'm not sure
exactly what it looks like. Yeah, I can take a ride through there and talk to Jeff about it.
Okay, thanks.
Anything else for Dave? All right, thank you very much. Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We met on May 2nd. A couple of our resolutions were on consent having to do with repairing a small part of our ethics law where we had some provisions that had been overlooked on the revision of that law. So we've added them, and we'll be having a public hearing on that. The other thing we did was to look at the biggest part of our meeting going through a number of policies, and as we've said before, we are trying very hard, thanks to Lisa Holmes and other folks at the county administration, to get through and update many of our policies this year. We won't get through all of them, but our goal has been to try to get about a third of them done, and we're doing some of the older ones first and some of the new ones that we have to add. So I'd like to move.
Why don't you take N first, the contingent fund?
Yes, we should do N. I should mention that we do have resolution N, appropriation from contingent fund, county clerk, and information technology services. That's ID 8532, and I move that.
Seconded by Lezen. Discussion?
This is $15,000, which is part of the effort to have the backup for our IT department in another county.
Okay. Short form roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
Okay. Resolution O. Here we go.
The hardest one's coming.
Resolution
off.
To update the administrative policy as to policy 01-48, service animals. Policy 01-43, tobacco-free workplace. Policy 01-42, closing, suspension, or modification of county operations on an emergency basis. Policy 01-43, diversity and inclusion. Policy 01-43, discrimination and harassment prevention. Policy 10-23, employee health and safety program. Policy 01-47, administration and maintenance of naloxone by county employees. Policy 09-47, green building policy. And policy number 0146, flying of flags on at county buildings. I move the resolution.
Seconded by Rich John. Okay.
Can I do a point of order?
Well, hold on. So, Mike, Kathy, everybody has described what they have in their folders?
Yes.
These policies were revised at the last Government Operations Committee, and everything highlighted in yellow is what was approved by that committee.
So just not the full policies again, but
just the pages that were revised of the policies.
So that might help guide your discussion. Who said point of order?
Me. I just want to do a motion to separate. So if I could separate out policy 0146, the rest I'd be good to go.
Okay, second for that. Anna, what? Wait, do you want to remove it from this resolution?
I do. Yeah.
I'd like to separate it into a separate resolution that we can vote on at a later, like not at a later time, like we could do it tonight, just not as part of that package.
Okay, I have understood from some folks that there's an interest in sending it back, that flags back, the flags policy back to committee.
Well, that's what you could do. If you separated it out, then you could pass the rest, and then
yeah.
Okay.
If you wanted to send it back.
Okay. All right, motion to separate.
It should be removed from the resolution.
It should be removed.
Amending
motion
the resolution to remove it.
I think that be motion to remove it from the resolution would be simpler? The same difference?
Since Kathy gave me this nice
sure
thing.
Okay, so it's
all right, it's done. Okay. So, meaning we've removed it or we've separated?
You've removed it.
We removed it.
Okay. And I removed it from the resolution. Then, do I get to say I would like to ask the GO committee to consider it again, to have it go back to committee?
Yes.
I get to say that.
You can say that if you'd like, yes.
I get to say that. And they
challenge the ruling of the chair, but
yeah.
I think it's very light.
Okay. I know, what?
Challenge the chair.
So, policy 0146, flying of flags at county buildings, is hereby sent back to GO for additional modification. All right, so the rest of what we have here.
I just want to say I'm not thrilled about that.
Really?
I think he's made that really clear.
All right. Let us go one at a time. So packet page 85. All right. It's getting late, all yells. We're not done here. So packet page 85. Let's look at each of these separately in case there's anything anybody has a question about. Service animals policy is beginning at packet page 85. Hearing nothing. Tobacco-free workplace, packet page 89. Okay. Packet page 92, closing county operations. Packet page 97, diversity and inclusion. I have a question on packet page 98. Under definitions, employees seems to include people who are actually not paid. As far as it sounds to me, it says so it's a definition. It includes members of any administrative board, commission, or agency. So our commissions and many boards, they're not paid. So does it make sense to have a separate section for volunteers? Not that volunteers shouldn't be included in this, but
they're not paid.
But they're not under, they're not considered employees.
Lisa, do you want to respond to that?
I think the reason that the wording was such in that definition was to make it parallel with the other policies around discrimination and harassment, and if discrimination and harassment happen to those class of individuals, advisory board members, volunteers, if they happen to them or they happen by them, they would be subject to the same rules. So I think that's why it was phrased that way, to make it parallel with those other policies. That's my guess.
Sure, and I agree with that, of course, but it seems funny to call unpaid people employees.
True. So
do you... I guess then the rest of the policy talks about county employees, and you'd have to, like, insert volunteer, employees and volunteers.
Maybe we could insert.
You could do an employees slash volunteers.
Slash volunteers, yeah.
So the definition encompasses both, and then if it's a friendly change, we could ensure that that is all reference to employees is employees slash volunteers. Does that work for us?
Yes. Works for me. Is that okay?
Friendly.
Yes.
Anna? Annie?
Are they going to receive then training or some type of notification about the policies?
The content of the policy doesn't change as it's been, as it is today. I don't remember what specifically is different about this section. Not all volunteers get training on every single policy, so to speak, if that's what you're asking. I don't. What are you asking for exactly?
Well, I agree that I'd like to hold them to the same standards, but are they getting some notification about what our policy is?
Standards have been applied to.
Right. Are they getting an email, or are they getting something that says, here's our policy?
Yeah, there are certain policies that, such as sexual harassment and I believe harassment and discrimination, that volunteers must be notified about, and they are, and they are counted and receive the training that's required.
So it appears that this definition is added. It's underlined. Is that right? So that's a new addition here. So I think Ann raises a good point. If volunteers are going to be held to this, they should have a copy of it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Copy of it, yes.
Okay. All right. Okay, great. The next page, I have just a language change. Page 79, 99, item number 7. In the third line, it talks about the county shall ensuring that all county employees are aware that no officer or employee shall take retaliatory action against an employee because the employee makes a diversity-related complaint or report in violation of any law, rule, or regulation. That sounds like the report would be in violation. So if it could say, makes a diversity-related complaint or report concerning a potential or alleged violation of any law.
Friendly.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Lisa, is that all right? Makes sense? All right. In the packet page 101, I understand that there's a change from, I want to make sure that the second paragraph there. Any employee may also, if they prefer, contact the State Division of Human Rights or the Equal Opportunity Commission to make a formal complaint of unlawful discrimination or harassment. The last sentence is deleted, and the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission was deleted. correct? I just want to confirm people saw that. Okay. All right. Anything on discrimination and harassment prevention, packet page 102? Anything on the, come on, these fingers.
Employee health and safety.
Employee, thank you. Employee health and safety, page 110. Anything on naloxone by county employees, page 113. And then that is it before the flag policy.
No, there's, no, there's green the building, building policy.
There's a green building. I'm sorry, yes.
I have one.
Packet page 121. Anna?
Very minor. Under responsible department on the top right, it should say planning and sustainability / facilities.
All right. Friendly? All right.
Yes.
With all those changes, okay, so that's the underlying policies for the resolution, correct? Any other discussion? All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Unanimous. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you to Jess and every and to the committee for working very hard on these things. It really does matter. We appreciate it. All right. Anything else, Mike?
Unless there are any questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. Before I report on the, I think you should know that less than an hour ago, the New York Times has reported that 8 students were wounded in a school shooting in Highlands Ranch, Colorado, a STEM charter school with students from kindergarten through 12th grade. They're not reporting yet the ages of the students involved. So.
No deaths?
No. Don't sound disappointed. That's a good thing.
It's not disappointment. That is a good thing.
Yeah. Apparently, the suspects were students. And the madness continues. So, we met on April 22nd, and thanks to Monica Roth, we had an education on ag districts, ag zoning, and right-to-farm communities, as well as a colleague of Monica's who gave us a somewhat sobering report on the health of the dairy industry in Tompkins County, which is a huge piece of our economy, and we should all be concerned about it. We will meet again on Tuesday, May 28th from 12:45 to 2:45. So far in the agenda, we have an update on the status of plastic bags, the beginning of our consideration of paper bags, a report on the Lansing Gun Club issues, and a report from CCE on a new 2-year grant they got for a farm-to-school food program.
Any questions for Deborah? Thanks very much. All right, I get the minutes for April 16th, please. Packet page 133. Can I get a motion? Moved by Anna, seconded by Deborah. Any comments? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. I would like a motion to go into executive session to discuss litigation and a personnel issue concerning 2 specific employees. Moved by Deborah, seconded by Mike Lane. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? All right. We will not, I do not expect us to take any action after the executive session. We'll take a 10-minute break to shut down the cameras. Thanks very much.